Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The
Ice Age! You want to come and jaw with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Lights, Camera, Barstool is presented by Omega Accounting Solutions. And on this episode, we are talking about two fairly big news stories. Avatar, The Way of Water, released their full trailer. We'll break that down, talk about James Cameron discussing how they may just stop doing Avatar movies. J.K. Rowling potentially back with Warner Brothers, maybe doing Harry Potter stuff. They want her back. And then our reviews today, Enola Holmes 2, which is on Netflix, and Weird, the Al Yankovic story, which is on Roku channel. We have an interview with the great Paul Reiser. We have all of that and more, but this episode, as we mentioned, presented by Omega Accounting Solutions. If your business suffered significant financial losses or had to shut down in part or in full during the pandemic, you may be eligible for ERC Employee Retention Credit, the powerful payroll tax credit. ERC was passed as part of the CARES Act to help small businesses recover from the pandemic. If you employed 5 to 500 employees and paid payroll during COVID, you may be eligible for a refund of up to $26,000 per employee. There are numerous subsidies, tax credits, all that, and more for big businesses. Large corporations have been taking advantage of these for many decades, but the Employee Retention Credit is finally a subsidy made exclusively for small businesses. That's right. But it has a small, limited window of opportunity. Now's the time to act before the government's filing window closes, and this refund is gone for good. Omega Accounting Solutions is a government tax incentive expert and offers services in business intelligence, fractional accounting, and analytics. Omega is a small business champion helping small business owners navigate the complexity of the accounting process, particularly for the immense opportunities around the ERC. Also, they empower small, mid-sized business owners to make informed decisions through powerful accounting, data analytics, and incentive reporting. A 10-minute call to Omega's ERC specialist can help your company recover up to $26,000 per employee. Call Omega Accounting Solutions at 800-704-2000, 800-704-2000, or go to omegataxcredits.com to learn more. Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 60, season 2. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Chris Castellani, Gooch coming at you today. Like we mentioned off the top, we got two reviews, an interview with Paul Reiser, very fun interview. He was a good story man. He just throwing off various nuggets from back in the day, stuff from Aliens and much more. Fun interview that Ken Jack and I had with Paul Reiser. Two news items that we'll talk about, two pretty big ones, two tentpole news items, and then we'll be ranking top five music biopics at the end in honor of what's not a music biopic whatsoever and is just a parody movie. That's the Weird Al movie. Off the top, though, Andor, episode 9 of Andor. This was like I was going to say a Dude's Rock episode, kind of is at the end, but I mostly say that because the memes from this episode were great. Episode 9 had a pretty climactic ending. I will tease episode 10 of Andor. We have seen it. Crazy. That's all I'll say.
It's the best of the season.
It is.
You said that already. So
yeah. But like, so it's kind of crazy that this one ended in such an awesome way. Spoiler alert. Where he's been asking Andy Serkis' character all... I guess for the both episodes, like how many guards?
How many guards?
How many guards? How many guards? How many guards? And finally at the end, he's like, no more than 12. It's like, oh, fuck. They actually, did you see them? They memed him, the soccer bar, the England soccer bar where they watch on the video. It was a very cool moment. This show's still not getting as much love as I think it should get, but you can tell the people who are watching it, for the most part, really enjoy it. And I do think it's gonna pop at some point because I think whatever we get in 10, we know is great. Who the fuck knows on 11 and 12?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I legitimately cannot wait 2 weeks from now. I mean, I think 10, since we saw it, and we won't give too much away and we can't really say too much, but I'll say it cements the show as what it is. And that's one of the best series of the year. I mean, it is It is phenomenal. The fact that they have written it so well to the point where just one line at the end of episode 9 packs that much of a punch. It's amazing. I'm just blown away. Like, I can't believe it's this good.
I know you feel the same, Kenjik, but I feel like this is, I'm sorry this is rude. I apologize if for some dumb reason the writers of Obi-Wan or Boba Fett are listening to this show. But you watch that, like, it's not like he wrote the greatest line in the history of movies. But, like, just the fact that they were able to land that at the end of the episode, I don't think Obi-Wan and Boba Fett were, like, capable of doing anything that, like, not even sophisticated. Just I can't imagine them being able to land, like a narrative arc across one episode like that with such, like, a punch.
I think the one thing that's, like, the biggest, I guess, plus or accolade you can give this is I saw someone bitching saying, like, this, you could replace this with anything that's not Star Wars and it would feel exactly the same. Like, yeah, that's exactly what rocks about this series, is that you could take this out of the Star Wars universe and it would be an incredible espionage series. Like, this jailbreak scene is on par with, like, anything you'll see from, like, most prison shows, like Oz or whatever else. Really like the way that they put this all together, and, like, the production value again, the white room, the uniforms, like the way that the electric floors, all this shit, like, all of it is so cool and just, like, so removed from Star Wars for the most part that it just makes you, I don't know, it feels like it's easier to get engrossed, because, like, I'm not sitting there being like, oh, well, when's Morpal Blurpo going to show up with his lightsaber?
Right, watching Star Wars Disney Plus shows, just waiting for
Glup Shitto
to show up. And, which, like, that's how most of these episodes have ended, right, yeah. Chris? And, like, I'll get, like, I want to know your thoughts on it. Most of these Star Wars episodes, and even Mando is...
They turned into that more.
Mando does that a little bit too. Now, Mando is different. Mando's a completely different show and it works. But the other ones have tried to be Mando and they've not worked well. But most of them end with, like, oh, musical crescendo, and then there's Glup Shitto walking around the corner. Like, just at least they ended this one, like, with the story. Where have you landed on it so far, Chris, in the last couple? We haven't talked to you about it in, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's good. I thought it peaked with episode 6. Which was the heist episode.
Okay, yeah.
It's good. It's good.
A little slow for your taste? I feel like that's been the most common complaint.
I find it to be kind of bloated. But I acknowledge, as, like, a straight narrative, it is the best Star Wars TV series since Mandalorian. I mean, by a wide margin.
Yeah,
I give it credit for this. It's actually made me care about the character of Cassian Andor, which I did not think.
Right.
Would.
Yeah. Not only anybody did.
Yeah. So I think they'll finish strong. Yeah. It's good.
I think, to your point, the bloated feel of it is, like, it's never affected me too much, and I think that's kind of part and due to the, like, arc. Just kind of, like, structure of the show. You know what I mean? Like, if this was, like, one long show where it's, like, everything, it didn't have, like, a kind of beginning and end between three episodes, I would definitely feel a little more like, all right, let's get some shit moving. But, like, after, like, a second episode of, like, kind of setup, I'm like, okay, I know the next episode's going to be a mini climax. You know what I mean? So, like, that part to me hasn't been as much of a bother as it might be with other shows.
I do appreciate that they're not scared to do that either, because you get the sense of that with the Marvel stuff, with some of the Star Wars. You're like, man, these are, like, really... short, and I don't mean they need to be bloated and jam-packed, but sometimes the Star Wars and Marvel stuff, you're like, that was barely anything. Like, well, we didn't have time to develop anything, care about anything. It's been Andor's been unexpected.
Dedra Mira has become an absolute terrifying villain.
Yeah. Just,
oh my god, what's the actress's name? She's been so good. Like, her face, the faces she makes are like,
she's a great, Denise.
I think it is Denise.
Looks like she's smelling shit, which is, like, a great face for a bad guy. Yeah,
she just looks completely unhinged at all points. And that one guy is completely fallen for her. He just likes a strong woman.
Dude, that guy is a simp.
He's hanging outside her office.
She is of no relation to Michael Goh, who played Alfred in
died of shitting.
What do you call those Batman movies? It's the
Schumacher.
The Schumacher verse, I guess.
But not really, because it's the Tim Burton verse.
The Burton ones too.
True.
It's like the Burton Schumacher verse.
The Burton Schumacher.
That's the disease he had. It's called Burton Schumacher.
No, he had what was it called?
We all saw Lorraine disease or something.
No, fuck, what was it? Hold on, what was it? We have to remember what it's called. Remember they
poo-poo.
Disease. There's a very, if you scroll back in our podcast history, you can find our
McGregor's syndrome,
right?
In the movie. I thought you meant in real life. Yeah.
No. We would be making fun of that. That'd be so mean.
That's what I was
Remember the part that made us die the most is when he
is CD of his, Alfred's porn.
Yeah, it's yeah. They go in to like figure everything out, like what's wrong. They put an Alfred CD.
It's literally says say. it's an Alfred CD.
It's such a that's such a perfectly 90s thing. It's like nobody really understood that shit back then. So like, I guess that's what he put on there.
You just hear steel drums playing.
Yeah. Well, we just kept making jokes that he wanted to fuck everybody in the room. That was a good one.
Also about the outfits in the prison. I really want one of those. It looks like such great loungewear.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to have one of those.
They look kind of comfy. Fits.
Yeah, they do.
And Circus, by the way, including into the next episode, he's so good in this.
Oh, yeah.
Nice,
he really
great,
is.
Consolidated
great.
Punch.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't know if he's done, but like, I wonder if he's kind of moving on beyond the CG stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you could see it even in this movie. Like, he, for a guy that's like not particularly large in stature, like he commands a room with the way he like speaks and the way he is like presence and shit. And it like really it comes into play a lot in this. Yeah.
I do love like we commend how the show is not full of like Easter eggs, and like it is. It actually it's full of a lot of Easter eggs, but like
just
very like
obvious.
It's just because it's not even Easter eggs. It's just in Star Wars. Like that's what it is. But there was like I like that part. But then once Circus and there's a few that they couldn't hold back. They're like, you think he's fucking Snoke, man? Yep. You think he's Snoke?
Like, I didn't even think about that.
Wow. But they were like, what if he had asked the question because he did press after the reveal happened. He's like, you think it's fucking Snoke, man?
Yeah.
Star Wars fans can't help themselves.
No, they
really can't.
They're compulsive.
No, I mean, I'm the same way. It's like we watch the show. Like, I'm like, I like that. And then you see the Gungan shield in the background. And you're like, oh, shit, man. There's the shield. I do think the series probably ends with a fairly large character. I don't know why. I just kind of think that's the case.
I think it's the Emperor.
Yeah, I think it's the Emperor, too, which I think is fine. He's been referenced.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, so I think it's fine. But, like, I don't know. Maybe not.
Again, we were talking about it.
I don't need it.
Thrawn would be cool just to get a glimpse, you know what I mean, of, like, him starting to, like, take on this sort of
because
war.
It's the ISB, too, and because of how, like, brutal and ruthless their tactics are, that would make sense. And that'd be cool. I also just – Lads Mikkelsen's performance is so cool. Is that anyway? So
yeah.
He's – I think Thrawn's in the Imperial Navy, and their ISB, which is, like, their version of, like, FBI, I guess. But, like, he – if they were to be like, hey, ISB, you clearly can't handle this shit. We're giving this over to Thrawn in the Navy. Like, that would be crazy.
That's the coolest part of the Rebels. I know some people are kind of off and on about Rebels. Rebels is not as good as Clone Wars. Rebels is still enjoyable.
No. Mm-hmm.
But the Rebel stuff with Thrawn was the best stuff.
So good.
And because, like, he used, like, it dove more into, like, military tactics than anything had really done in Star Wars before. And his maneuvers were always just badass and made the character just better. So, we'll see. There's three left. We've seen 10, as we've said. The best thing I can say about 10, I can't wait to watch 10 again. Mm-hmm. Like, 10 is just fucking awesome.
It's also very nice knowing that, like, they came into this knowing there's going to be two seasons. Like, they have a very clear plan on what they want to do with this.
Yeah.
Chris, you said we didn't have any She-Hulk to watch this week?
I'm heartbroken. And Rings of Power. I mean, those are usually the highlights of my week.
Exactly. Chris's favorites right there.
Wait till we start our Christmas clause watch, our breakdowns of the Christmas clauses.
Oh, just wait till we watch like any of these terrible Christmas movies in general. I'm sure Chris is going to have a great time with those.
Roman, our next sponsor. Roman, 42% of men experience moderate to extensive hair loss in their lifetime. There are what?
There's four of us here, and one of us is having bad. So.
My guy Ham on Andor, he's got a bit of a – he's got a Landon Donovan situation going on. He could use this.
Roman, not to like, I mean, Roman, I mean, I'm glad you're advertising. I feel like Landon Donovan should be doing Roman reads before the World Cup.
Yeah.
What does he sound like?
Probably regular. Like it's pretty regular voice.
There are options available to help stop balding in its tracks. My buddy uses Roman's hair loss thing, by the way. Loves it. He's a listener to the show. Sooner a person starts treatment for hair loss, easier it is to keep the hair they have, which is also important. Roman's offering both prescription medication and over-the-counter treatments. They also offer specially formulated shampoos and conditioners. 80% of men who use prescription hair loss treatment had no further hair loss after 2 years. Getting started is simple. Complete a free online visit. Then a U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. Medication is appropriate. Roman ships it directly to you in discreet packaging with free 2-day shipping. The whole process straightforward and discreet. Remember, Roman does much more than just this. Many things for men's and any health that you can possibly get. Check out Roman. ro.co/lights. But the hair loss in particular today we're talking about. Treatment start at $20 per month on a quarterly plan. Right now, Roman has a special offer for you. 20% off your first order. ro.co/lights. ro.co/lights. for 20% off. My buddy's listening right now, probably on his way to a client lunch.
You know, you have a buddy named Landon, and he's the only other only Landon I've ever met in real life. Landon Donovan's the only Landon I've heard of, and then Landon Donovan, or Landon, your friend. That's it.
I got a friend named Landon.
He's the only Landon I know.
I've never met a real Landon my entire life. It's a cool name. I like the name.
Actually,
a lot.
You know what, Roman? Do not remember when Landon Donovan supported Mexico in the World Cup when the U.S. was out. Fuck that.
That was really weird.
I take that back.
Didn't dig that.
That was so fucking lame.
Joe Ballin's thinking he looks like Landon Donovan is still very funny.
I mean, it was people ask what he looks like. I go, he kind of looks like Landon Donovan.
Yeah.
he always said he was dumpy and fat.
Yeah.
But he's not.
Never.
He just looked like Landon Donovan. Mm-hmm. That was a very accurate description. Avatar: The Way of Water. So we know a little more about Avatar: The Way of Water. We got a full-on trailer. Here's a synopsis, which I think has not changed much since we first read it. Set more than a decade after the events of the first film, Avatar: The Way of Water begins to tell the story of the Sully family, the trouble that follows them, the lengths that they go to keep each other safe, the battles they fight to stay alive, and tragedies they endure. That's a pretty great description of the trailer because you don't get too much. Right. They're not really revealing too much of the story. It's pretty overarching. We also need to note that Stephen Lang is back as a mean guy, bad guy, like who died at the end of the first one. He even said too, he's like, I don't know how I'm going to get brought back. I did die. Mm-hmm. But apparently he's back. I guess though, at that point, when they have all those magic rocks and trees and aliens, like the leap to say he was brought back to life is not that crazy. So like, I'm not going to get all caught up on that. He's apparently the main villain. We didn't see him at all in this. Giovanni Ribisi's back. He was kind of the guy that was running like the dig or the search for the mineral. 3 hours and 10 minutes long. Long movie. I'm not overly shocked by that. Honestly, if we're waiting this long, it better be that long.
Yeah.
Imagine being ripped like an hour and 20-minute movie after like 13 years.
He's setting himself up, I'll say that much.
He is. He's like, it's a cool sub 90. But then here's the quote, and let's talk about this. What do you think about the trailer? Ken Jack, I'll start with you.
I thought it was good. Obviously, didn't reveal a ton even compared to the last one, which me and Chris had talked about on Friday as well, just because like I'm in the camp, I think at this point, with the way trailers have kind of evolved, where the less you tell me about the movie, the better. Like, I want to know almost nothing. I just want to get like, it's essentially like a sampler, where I'm like, I just want to see what I'm going to be looking at, what I'm going to be hearing, stuff like that. I don't want to hear any of the story because that's the one thing you go to the movie to see, really. So I'm happy they didn't really reveal a lot of it. I think the CG did look great. Like, it looks undeniably fucking awesome visually. Sound was great for whatever that's worth, too. I was listening on my I did it on my computer first, and I was like, I feel like this is not fair. And then I watched it on YouTube on my TV, and it was, like, way better with the sound bar and shit. I think this is going to be awesome. I think we've talked about it before. Avatar kind of unfairly treated by the public because like it's not totally the public's fault, where it's like, why is the highest grossing movie of all time Avatar? Is it worthy of that mantle? Probably not, but like, it is still a pretty damn good movie, even if it's ripping off other stuff, which we had talked about as well. But like, when you go and look at almost any sci-fi property, and we talked about this as well, like even fucking A New Hope is a ripoff of A Hidden Fortress by Kurosawa. All this shit is taken from somewhere else. The one thing I will say with this movie is that I hope the plot is to a degree different from what the first one is, because I feel like it's so what we know so far, very similar to the first, where it's just, hey, here's Navi versus humans trying to get whatever resources and shit. So if we get a little bit of a advancement, then I'm happy.
Chris.
I'll reiterate what I said on the long take. I think the trailer is good. I think the movie is going to be good, but I kind of need it to be great.
It has to be great.
That's the issue, is I see a really good trailer for what will probably be a really good movie, but I mean, we didn't wait 13 years with all this hype just to get like a 7 out of 10 movie. That's the one thing that worries. Now, visually, it looks freaking incredible. And I went off on this a little bit on the long take too. We're like, a film is subjective, but the people who think that this doesn't look good, like visually look good, are almost objectively wrong. Like, they have no idea how CG actually works. This looks freaking incredible from a visual standpoint. I still have serious concerns about, I do have concerns about the runtime, the story, and ultimately, the characters. But I'm really rooting for this.
Mm-hmm. Jake Sully, baby, back in action.
Yeah.
I do hope, and I don't know where you stand on this, Gooch, I hope they don't spend too much time in like flashback mode. I don't know if they will. I don't know if they're going to be worried about that. Like, I'm very curious. If I were to ask him one question right now, that'd be kind of my thing. Is like, do you worry that the time has been so wide between release that maybe like, did you add elements that kind of catch people up? Like, that's my only thing. I'm good with just a new, like fresh. Just let's just go 10 years later.
Yeah, just build out the world. Focus on that's really where the strength of, I think, the Avatar franchise will lie, is building out the world, because it is just beautiful and gorgeous to look at. It's something that I wish they almost dove into more of. I mean, the stuff we got was kind of weird, but that's what you go to a movie like this for, is to just be sucked into a completely different planet. Mm-hmm. Like Kinjak said, my biggest complaint against the people who are already shitting on this movie is like, comparing it to Dance of the Wolves and like Pocahontas, it's just unfair, because 95% of blockbusters are retreads of unoriginal concepts. So I'm not going to fault a big blockbuster for retreading an unoriginal concept. As long as they execute on it, which I have faith in James Cameron. I don't know why. I just have faith in James Cameron.
He doesn't make bad movies.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's, yeah. Come on. He says some dumb things sometimes, but the guy can direct.
He backs it up.
Yeah, so as long as it executes, I think we'll be fine. The runtime does worry me. Targeted at a general audience, 3 hours is a lot to ask of. So we'll see how that plays to the masses.
Yeah, I like what I've seen.
Also, Joel David Moore. I didn't realize he was in this cast, which is a fun guy to see pop up.
He was in the last one.
Was he? Yeah. I don't remember him at all.
Yeah. Sounds like Andrew Luck. Him and Andrew Luck have their voice twins.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, you've never seen the clip. That's one of just few YouTube uploads.
Yeah. I my personal channel, you can see a clip of Andrew Luck and Joel David Moore doing back-to-back, having, like, I just spliced it together. Here's the comment from James Cameron, though, if you don't know what it is. He said, the market could be, this is, I don't know what this is from, Collider, maybe? Apologize. I should have put that down. The market could be telling us we're done in 3 months, or we might be semi-done, meaning, okay, let's complete the story within movie 3 and not go endlessly. If it's just not profitable, we're in a different world now than we were when I wrote this stuff, even. It's the 1-2 punch, the pandemic and streaming. Or conversely, maybe we'll remind people what going to the theater is all about. The film definitely does that. The question is, how many people give a shit now? I mean, I like the comment. I like that he's aware enough to be like, look, if I got to wrap it up, I'll wrap it up. Now, like you said, the key thing is he better world build here, because other people are not going to care about seeing like 5 more of these. But I don't like this. I don't think the streaming and pandemic thing's an excuse anymore.
Not for blockbusters.
No,
that affects the $70 million budget movie. That does not affect blockbusters. Blockbusters are doing better than they ever have. I mean, we get more billion-dollar movies now than ever before.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not like a small-time guy that A24 just found because he made a cool like Instagram story on a New York subway, now has a feature film with A24. Like, he can't say that. Like, he doesn't have that excuse.
Jimmy Cameron, A24 movie.
Yeah. He doesn't have that excuse. So, on the other hand, I don't like fault what he's saying there. Like, I do appreciate that he has like that awareness, like wrap it up if he has to. But I hope he doesn't. If he has this vision, he's had this vision for decades, then I hope he's able to execute it.
Ironically, they actually A24 is set to come out in 2032. James Cameron said he's already written it.
I just saw something like Culture Crave posted where they're like, yeah, if the next Avatar tanks, then they're going to cancel all the next Avatar movies. And it's like, they had no source, no nothing. They just said that. And I was like, I don't know.
Aren't they already done with the fucking third one?
Yeah.
I thought they were about to start 4.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they're already filming 4.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you know, so he's so rich, though. He could probably get halfway through a movie and just be like, fuck it. Mm-hmm.
That one quote he had like a month ago was very funny, when he was like, in a meeting, and I think they told him to trim down the runtime on the first Avatar, and he was like, you see this fucking conference room we're sitting in? Titanic paid for that. I'll do what I want. That's like, he's like, put his dick on the table.
He can. I mean, he literally, if anyone can, it's literally him. He's two of the biggest blockbusters in fucking history.
Yep. Yeah. Let's see. That's the news. Flash Film News says a trailer for The Flash won't release until 2023. Okay. Sounds good.
Didn't we already have one?
Not a full trailer.
Well, we got a teaser.
Yeah,
because is that movie ever going to come out?
They're still trying to CGI out Ezra Miller.
Ezra.
This episode also brought to you by Allbirds. Am I wearing them today? We'll just say I am. I usually
am. I'm wearing some.
No, Ken Jack's wearing them. Allbirds.
Oh, you got the Hokas on it.
I usually blur out our feet during the YouTube upload.
With winter weather making it hard. Winter weather's not great. You need a gift idea for outdoor stuff. The Allbirds Mizzle Collection, which is a great name, by the way. Designed for those who they won't take snow for an answer. They feature puddle guard technology, which you need in New York.
Yes, that's true. Especially in the winter.
Keeps winter wonderland where it belongs. Not in your shoes, folks. Allbirds, you'll enjoy the added comfort of treading lighter on the planet. And trust me, they feel light. It almost feels like you're not wearing shoes when you wear Allbirds sometimes.
And so easy to clean, too, dude. I mean, you talk about this all the time, but like whenever I forget them, like even a little bit dirty, you just throw them in the wash and then you let them air dry. That's it. And they're perfectly clean. It's insane.
Yep. And again, soft, easy to clean. And you look at them and they look like shoes that you'd normally buy and say, I would never wear these in New York because it's cold and wet out. Mm-hmm. But no, Allbirds, you don't have to worry about that with Allbirds. Great shoes. Dress them up, dress them down. We've been talking about them for years. Built using premium natural materials with a low environmental impact. They put the carbon footprint right on the shoe so you can see the difference it makes. Offset the footprint into zero, making the Mizzles that we're talking about completely carbon neutral. We love Allbirds, all their shoes, tree runners, wool runners, the Mizzle, all that and more. Mix and match laces. Buy extra laces. You can make the shoes look a little different. This holiday season, get on the nice list. I don't know with who. Maybe you don't. Maybe want to be on the naughty list and buy some shoes. I don't know. Allbirds, Allbirds.com.
Not on the nice list if you have a tattoo.
That's true. I've seen every dick in the world.
I don't care if you have a tattoo.
It's not good.
Him being in everything everywhere all at once is still so fucking funny. It's just so random.
Discover your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. It's Allbirds.com. We talked about the same skit like a month ago. That's why no one watches AOL Blast.
I've been thinking about it because the full trailer for Violent Night came out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Robert, yeah, so like every right. time I just think of it, I'm just like, certainly not good.
It's so funny.
God.
No one even fucking listens to AOL Blast.
That line's completely crushed me.
Oh my God.
Do you guys watch My Policeman before I play? I watched it the other day.
Oh yeah, yes, I did watch
it. What a long-winded way to just have Harry Styles say, like, "Oh, I'm gay," in it. Like, it's just like it was.
I don't know what a bore that movie was. I'm like very caught up on movies right now, and I've watched too many things. Things are blending together, but My Policeman is not one of them.
That was a nothing movie for me.
Just an absolute nothing.
Just a bore. Total bore.
Just an absolute nothing.
Doesn't feel like a movie. Yeah, you know, the type of movie that feels like a movie.
Well, this one wasn't a don't go to the theater movie because it was on Prime, to be fair.
Well, what did you give it?
I didn't even score it yet. It's not going to be good, though. I
gave it a 60.
Probably lower than that.
I feel maybe Harry's people might be like, yo, we got
By the way, the one thing that made me realize is that English beaches may be the worst fucking thing on earth. Did you see the beaches there on the beginning of that movie? It's like a beach full of nothing but rocks. You're stepping on, and not like sand. All rocks, like all the things you hate to step on the beach, just like piled up. And they're all just like, yeah, let's all go ahead in the water. Let's sit on the beach and tan. Like, that's disgusting. Yeah,
building rock fucking castles.
Freaks, dude.
They're just eating sunscreen. Those fucking nasty Brits.
Disgusting human beings.
Pasty. Just coming out of their skin.
Nasty human beings.
Next up. J.K. Rowling.
Speaking of the Brits.
Speaking of British people. David Zaslav.
She also hates the rocks. She prefers to go on the turf if she can.
Yes.
She's probably got some opinions about Harry Styles.
Oh, yeah. In that movie specifically?
Oh, yeah.
JK.
Oh, him dressing like an imperial officer.
Oh, he did dress like an imperial officer on the red carpet, right?
Did you see
what the hell?
Yeah, I did.
That was very... Who dressed him for that? That was so funny. But he looked like a legit, like an imperial officer. All he was missing was like the two things, the comm sticks or whatever they called it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean... He just needed a little metal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit of metal on the side, but yeah. I'm sorry.
David Zaslav.
Quote.
We need to find Cassian Andor.
He the head of Warner Brothers, he made a quote. This is a paraphrase from Daily Mail. He said this about Warner Brothers, Discovery, all they said. We haven't had a Superman movie in 13 years. We haven't done a Harry Potter in 15 years. We'll get back to that in a second. The DC movies and the Harry Potter movies provided a lot of profits for Warner Brothers for the past 25 years. Okay. Harry Potter thing is not true. He was definitely paraphrasing. He was rounding up. I don't blame him for that. It was 11 years ago, last Harry Potter. Very key point of that comment, though. They've absolutely made three Harry Potter movies in the last 15 years because they made the Fantastic Beasts movies. But I appreciate that he's like, fuck these. I actually kind of like him for this. He's like, I bet they'd be like, oh, what about Fantastic Beasts? He's like, what do you mean? Like, those are Harry Potter, David. Are you fucking kidding me?
Him like not either not knowing what they are or refusing to acknowledge them for being so shitty.
The last one was literally called Ted Dumbledore in the title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want them to seal it in a vault so no one can see it. They just pretend it never happened.
So there is an idea that they are interested in having J.K. Rowling do sequels. She did a sequel. It's on stage in New York. And maybe in London as well.
The play is apparently good. The book fucking stunk. I'll say that much.
Yeah, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. This is the one where she was like, oh, no, Hermione was black all along. I'm like, all right, J.K., you're just J.K.
She's such a fucking liar.
Yeah, that's she's a fraud.
She loser. Shit up. She totally.
Yeah, she's – look, like – and I think that's the thing. I'm not a J.K. Rowling defender, but, like, I've seen people say it before. Like, when she wrote Harry Potter, it wasn't in a world where things are, you know, more inclusive. You don't have as much representation and stuff. And I don't think that is necessarily a thing that you can hit her on. I think nowadays she fucking talks too much. But she didn't like that. And so in order to make up for that, she just started lying. She just started making things up. Again, that's my one time I'll defend her. I don't think it's fair to say because she wrote it in a time where whether you think it was right back then or not is a whole different thing. But like it wasn't that crazy. So now like when we look at it, how many years later since Harry Potter came out? Like, okay, like yeah, if she wrote Harry Potter nowadays, I'm sure representation would be much better. But like she then felt the need to just make shit up to cover her ass, and it just made her look worse.
The best tweet of that was the Hagrid one, like J.K. Rowling spins a wheel and like, yeah, Hagrid was actually gay and he joined ISIS. Like, he just like made shit up. But she also like I don't even think it's necessarily an inclusivity thing when she was like writing the books. Like she included people of other races and creeds.
That is
she
true.
She just wrote them very racistly.
She did write them very – okay, she that
made,
is true.
She made the goblins like Nazi caricatures of Jews. And then she made like
a. You have a problem with Cho Chang?
Cho Chang, Asian character in the entirety of Harry Potter.
The one Jewish character being named Goldstein.
Yeah. Dude, I mean.
There's a black character named Leslie Shacklebolt.
My God, dude. Like, come on. Come on.
Who only says he only has one line in the movie? Dumbledore's got style.
Yeah.
But that's like the Goldstein thing is the best example. Yeah. It's like, look, that aside, the names are a little ridiculous. They're absurd. But. Like, you didn't need to then go back and say, oh, no, I actually did, because now you deserve putting a spotlight on the fact that you look worse. Mm. Crazy. I don't know if these would even work. Would they even happen? Would anyone come back to do these?
She
wasn't even in the fucking reunion thing, right?
No. They didn't want to be with her. No.
Daniel Radcliffe, like, disses. They all kind of disses themselves from her. It would have to be that's the thing. It's like, I think the only way to do Harry Potter stuff is to do a sequel that's close. But you need some people back.
Yeah.
Right. That's the problem is if they were going to do a sequel or prequel that is related, well, they just did that. Now those movies stink.
Right. So you're just going to do Fantastic Beasts again, I guess.
Exactly. Right.
And so, they had a character. Like they had fucking Dumbledore. And then I guess McGonagall, even though like that was muddied. If that was actually McGonagall or not.
They had Voldemort Snake, who J.K. Rowling always said was meant to be a middle-aged or a 30-year-old woman the whole time.
Right? It was – well, she finally brought – that was,
theory?
People were like, she probably brought another Asian character in it. It ended up being just a snake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just gets turned into a snake.
And somebody pressed her about it, and she was like, oh, no, I planned that out like 30 years ago.
Yeah,
that
sure.
I've had that forever. Yeah. No, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What would you want, though? Like, if we did a Harry Potter thing – I'm not as well versed in the books, but I think there's two things that are fairly obvious to me, at least, of what they could do. I don't know if one would work, and that's the Quidditch World Cup stuff. People were always pretty.
That's my answer. Yeah.
Okay. That's yours as well.
Yeah.
Because like that was kind of the crazy thing about when they showed the Quidditch World Cup, and which one was that? It was the Triwizard
Goblet of Fire. They didn't show it.
So what they did was issues.
They barely
they show the stadium and they go, the World Cup is underway. Then they just cut to the after party.
It's all over.
Yeah.
Good old commissioner of the Quidditch World League, Ludo Baggins. Yeah. That's a good Star Wars name.
I don't know how you do that. I don't think you can make that into a full movie, but I'd like to see more of that.
Ted Lasso version of
Moneyball.
Yeah, I was thinking Remember the Titans.
Dude, the fucking stats.
Miracle. The USA puts together like a ragtag team. But I think the other one for that movie too be the all the Triwizard stuff. I think could be fleshed out more. I think you could find a way to make a Hunger Games-y maybe like more fleshed out Triwizard thing. They went into the Triwizard stuff though. Which one did they not show?
Which event?
They show the World Cup. That was the biggest thing.
No, of the Triwizard, did they show all the events?
No, they showed all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think if I wanted to have one thing out of Harry Potter, it would be kind of the same thing I still want out of Star Wars, which is just something that feels like more rated R-ish. You know what I mean? Because like magic, you can do anything. You could do literally anything. And like that could lead to some serious horror and some serious fucked up stuff. And I think if you could kind of dive into that a little bit, I mean, it's Harry Potter, supposed to be a kids thing, whatever. But like as an adult now, that is something I'd be interested in. They won't ever do it, but I'd kind of like it. Other than that, like, I don't know, just a new story, maybe set one in modern day about a person with a double life. Like, and that's something that they haven't really done a lot of with Harry Potter. Like they dealt with Harry dealing with his parents. But like if you have a kid who just has to deal with the double life of being a wizard in Hogwarts and also be having to pretend to be a muggle in real life, or a nomad, as they put it.
Nomad.
Fantastic Beasts. Like, I think that would be kind of cool. Like Hannah Montana it a little bit, except have it a little bit cooler because it's magic.
I got a few ideas. These are serious. Like a Rise of the Order. So that's like the Order of the Phoenix. So that's like Harry's parents and Snape.
Yeah,
and
I could.
That would be cool. So that would be like, I mean, it's kind of like what they're dealing with maybe a little bit in Andor, where it's like you see the rebellion against the dark forces, like Rise. That could be interesting and more serious.
I think you need to also bring back something that has Voldemort in it.
Yeah.
Also, Ralph Fiennes is like the one person that's defended J.K. Rowling to the death. So he'll come back.
Yep.
He'll be back.
It's always good when the guy that played Goebbels is defending you. Eamon Geth, right?
Do that same group of people, but do them in high school. Mm. Like James and Lily and Snape, but do it like Euphoria.
I mean, that's what it'd be like. They were such bullies. All the good guys were bullies in that.
I mean, James is an asshole. You could put Jacob Elordi in there and fit right in.
Sydney Sweeney is
yeah, really I would love that. Actually, cast Sydney Sweeney as a young McGonagall.
Yeah,
not that I want to see her turn into a cat girl or anything, but
that's actually funny.
And then do one on like the founders, like Godric Gryffindor, Helena Huffle. Yeah. And actually, I was talking to my sister about it. She said that could get like really bloody.
Yeah,
she said there's something with Helena where like her and like the Bloody Baron. I don't know who the hell that is, but
that's the dude. Oh wait, no, that's Nearly Headless Nick.
Yeah, apparently they were like in love with each other, but like were extremely violent. And she said it would be like easily rated R. Mm. So those are some ideas. I'm not with you. I think Harry Potter has incredible potential. I think the world building on that, much like Star Wars, is incredible. There's a really cool world to explore there. Just keep J.K. Rowling the fuck away from the script. She doesn't know how to write. She doesn't know how to screenwrite. Yeah. It's very obvious she does not know what she's doing when it comes to screenwriting. And I'm not sure if she knows what she's doing outside of what she's already put pen to paper in the original books.
Yep.
There needs to be some more color in this, too, in terms of like the actual pop on screen. David Yates...
sepia tone motherfucker.
Yeah, he just David Yates did the last couple. David Yates made a couple good ones.
He made some great ones.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, but like there's such a drab look, and I get that the especially towards the end of Harry Potter, things were drab and very dreary, and people were dying. But I don't need that to be. It's fucking magic, like Ken Jack said.
Yeah,
it's magic.
I feel like it got better with the last Deathly Hallows, but like Half-Blood Prince is so like, dude, turn a fucking light on. I like the movie. I'm just saying that
I agree. That's the biggest critique of that movie is it looks fucking
slughorn.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely, I'm trying to think of a director that would be good for this sort of thing, like someone with experience in.
The funny thing is that would work. One of the best ones is Alfonso Cuarón. Like, that's the crazy thing. It's like, I don't know. Use Andor as an example. You need a guy like a Gilroy.
Yeah.
You need somebody who...
I mean, Chris brought it up. I think this is your point last week on the long take, was that J.K. Rowling, in a way, is the George Lucas of...
100%.
Yeah.
Like a modern George Lucas, where she's built an incredible world, but does she really know what to do with it from here, or does she need someone to come in like a Filoni and a Gilroy to kind of helm the narrative?
She's the perfect ideas person. Yeah. But in terms of pen to paper, there is a, you know, she leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah. There's a lot of like, I think, issues with the way that this has been presented so far, where it's Zaslav, whoa, J.K. Rowling, whoa, putting them together to make Harry Potter, which is a great property, that's bad. And I really wish it was neither of them being involved at all. And if she had someone like a Filoni, I don't know who it would be, but like if she needs someone like that, someone who understands what makes the property good that isn't her.
I'm sure there's plenty of great writers out there in Hollywood right now who grew up on Harry Potter and love Harry Potter. I'm sure there's someone out there who could easily come in. And
Frank Wright got fired. Interesting. Sorry.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's JK and Warner. We'll see what ends up happening there. I'd imagine they're going to beg her. Please, ma'am.
Do they need her? Is that what? I don't understand the process of asking her. Do they want her to write a script or do they need her approval to do more? I don't understand where the rights lie.
That's a good question. I'm assuming
like, could they make more stuff without her approval?
Who has?
They own the rights in full, I imagine.
She might be able to say they can't make something.
Like a final
if
say.
They were to make, I'm not sure exactly what it is. NBC Universal, no.
Interesting. I don't know. Creative rights. I don't know how that works.
Warner Brothers has the exclusive rights to Harry Potter universe in conjunction with Rowling or something.
Well, so
all future Potter projects would have to go through her and her company as well as the studio. Fuck.
That fucking sucks.
Fuck, man, that really stinks. Damn.
It's a bummer.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One sweet tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
This is brought to you by Game Time, a great ticketing app created by fans for fans. Game Time's ticketing app that makes it easier than ever to score last-minute deals on tickets, sports, concerts, shows, much more. Guaranteed to get the lowest price. Go now, NFL season, not halfway over, but pretty damn close. College football winding down, big games coming up, maybe go to a conference title. Mm-hmm. Go see concerts, go see a Broadway show. Game Time is great. You can go see anything. Every day, it's a new, someone at the company has seen some sort of new thing. Brandon Walker went to his first ever hockey game.
Can't imagine that.
Who did I just see? Oh, Frank the Tank went to Dolphins Bears in Chicago. Mm-hmm. He said Soldier Field's a dump. Which apparently
it's pretty old. It's a pretty old stadium. Yeah.
Tons of us have been using it. Tons of our fans have been using it. We've been using Game Time all year. I'm going to use it to go see Cavs play the Knicks. You're a big Cavs fan again.
Massive. Yeah. I mean, we look great.
They're very
good. We look phenomenal. We had Mitchell and Garland both out Friday night, pull out a 20-point win. This team's good.
It's good stuff.
I didn't even get to mention. This is a good time to mention. I did win LCB Bowl against you. The Bengals got absolutely fucking laughed off the field in Cleveland.
Well, I don't remember that happening. We won. We were up. I don't know if you saw us.
Boy, that worked out quite well for you. It happened on Monday night, but after we recorded.
See, this is two games ago. We're talking.
Do you play the Chargers this year?
I don't think so. No.
You definitely don't play the Lions. No. That's it. You're the loser. You lost. Lost the NFL.
You're tonight's big loser.
Somehow you went from the Super Bowl to the loser of the LCB Bowl season is embarrassing.
This is we're talking so much earlier in the season now. I hadn't even had a can of Skyline chili this season at the point of that happened.
You made the dip yesterday.
I will note.
Did you see my dip?
The Skyline chili dip.
What'd you think?
Are you a Skyline chili guy, Chris? You're from the Midwest.
I've never had it.
You're a Michigan guy though, so it's not like it.
Yeah, it's the only time that it was ever brought up to me, the first time I heard of it was when I went to Cleveland, ironically enough. I became aware of it then, but I'll have it at some point. It's
super rare. It doesn't fully count because the Browns didn't play, but nobody's team lost yesterday. The Lions won. Lions embarrassed Aaron Rodgers.
That's our nonsense win that we have every fucking year to ensure that we don't get a top three pick. So we're gonna end up going 5-12, and we're gonna draft ninth and get another tight end. Yes, we're gonna do this shit all
there.
Over.
You go.
Download Game Time now. Go see the Lions. See the Chargers. Go see the Bengals. See the Browns. Go see whoever. What a sad group of four teams. I know you made the Super Bowl last year, but that's just like.
This feels like I'm getting picked on now.
Five. Yeah, you are. I mean, whatever,
Chris.
Keep beating up on the NFC South. That's sick. Yeah.
Chris, live reaction to that Skyline dip. What do you think?
That looks good. Okay, to me, that looks good.
It's meat
I don't
and cheese.
Know.
You can't. No way to go wrong.
I can't roast that.
Yeah. What are we at? Five.
Our coworkers went to Cincinnati a couple weeks ago. Yeah. Dana and Glenny Balls, and they said the best thing they've had on their tour of all these college campuses has been Skyline. Their tours included like Lubbock, Texas. So
yeah. I can't remember the ball scale. Yeah.
Glenny's like at McDonald's in Lubbock, Texas. Oh, it doesn't hold a candle to Skyline Chili. Sorry to say.
Download Game Time. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
As allegations of cover-ups and scandals continue to surface against Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, yet another former teacher has come forth claiming that they, too, are the victim of what can only be called institutionalized corruption. Today, we are joined by former film studies teacher David Lynch. How are you today, Mr. Lynch? It's actually professor of film studies, but I'm well, and I'm ready to share my story. Of course, my apologies, Professor Lynch. You are the 27th former employee or student to come forward with allegations against the Sorting Hat. Do you feel comfortable sharing any of your experiences with the Sorting Hat that led you to join the lawsuit against your former employer, Hogwarts? Well, of course. I can recall my first bad experience with him when I was out of school and in my second year of teaching. It was an annual holiday party in Dumbledore's office, and I can remember walking past his closet at some point in the night. And I heard a voice asking for help. And whose voice was that? Well, it was the Sorting Hat, believe it or not. He claimed that he had been kicked off his stool, and I thought nothing of it in helping him.
But there was more?
Yes. Once I had helped him, and he had thanked me, he started to try to move things in a more intimate direction. He said, "Come on, don't you want to know what house you're in? Just let me on top of you for a minute. It won't take long."
I mean, didn't you kind of want to know what house you're in? It has to be better than a BuzzFeed quiz, right?
I was sorted in my house 20 years prior. Ravenclaw.
Oh, damn, that sucks, bro.
Anyways, I turned down his aggressive persistence and let myself out of the party early.
But that wasn't the end of things, was it?
Not at all. I can recall a few years later, I came back to my chambers, and there he was. I wasn't sure how he got in there, being a hat and all, but I figure he'd bartered some snitch powder for a ride from that drug addict Phoenix living in Dumbledore's office.
Wait, you mean Dumbledore's Phoenix Fox is a drug addict?
Still is. You think all those deaths are natural? I'd say 90% of them are ODs.
Oh wow, that's fucked up.
Anyways, he said he wanted to apologize for how he'd acted at that holiday party, which I forgave him. I don't like holding grudges. And then he offered me some of his drugs, and David Lynch isn't one to turn down a good dime, so I thought, why not?
And was it a good time?
I mean, at first, hell yeah. Have you ever been on snitch powder? That shit will have you higher than giraffe balls. But at some point in the night, things took a turn south. He began to wrinkle and crinkle his way over on top of me, and I was in a bit of an asshole and couldn't move a muscle. He was on my head demanding I call him the Snorting Hat. It wasn't until 10 minutes after that I came to and threw him down my laundry chute.
And what happened from there?
Well, I let Dumbledore know once again what he'd done, and the hat was never punished, and he continued working there. He's tenured.
Do you think that Dumbledore has a problem protecting students and faculty?
I mean, what do you think?
Well, that's all the time we have today. Until next time on 60 Seconds, I'm Bob Goochman, signing off.
Interview with Paul Reiser. We talked about the show he's been in, Reboot, talked about Aliens, talked about Stranger Things. This was a really fun interview. Paul Reiser was the man. Here's our interview with Paul Reiser.
We are very excited to have Paul Reiser on for the first time ever. We just had a very morbid off-air discussion about the world ending, but outside of the world ending, how's everything going? I feel like it's got to be going great.
That aside, the world ending, table that. Everything is dynamite. So you just gotta forget that.
Pretty big year for you. We'll talk a bunch of other things too. We'll throw Stranger Things in there, but you got a show that's out on Hulu that we talked about a few months ago when the trailer first dropped. It's called Reboot, which we'll get into the world of nostalgia in a second, because I feel like the show has obviously and not even feel like it does have a lot to say about that. It's kind of funny, but we'll get back to that in a second. But Reboot, about the dysfunctional cast in early 2000s hit sitcom Step Right Up. They must face their unresolved issues and navigate a vastly different media and entertainment environment when a young writer successfully pitches a reboot of their show. Out on Hulu. Go check it out on Hulu. Very funny show. We talked about the cast before on this show. Not just you, Keegan-Michael Key, Johnny Knoxville, Rachel Bloom, Callum Worthy, Judy Greer, we've had on this show before. Great cast.
Yeah.
This has to be, though. You're in so many things, whether a reboot of a show you've been on, which we'll get to in a second. Stranger Things, which is so nostalgia heavy. And now you're doing a show, which is a commentary on the fact that we reboot everything.
Yeah. It's a really funny show. And it's created by Steve Levitan, who co-created Modern Family. The idea, he has said that when 4 or 5 years ago, when everybody was rebooting all these shows from 20 years earlier, he said, well, somebody must be doing a show about a reboot. That seems such an obvious thing, but nobody did. So he went and wrote this. And so when I read it, I came to the party late. I read the script and most of the cast was already in. So I went, well, this is like a no-brainer. It's very rare that you get, you know, sometimes you go like, this might be good. But in this case, it was like, no, this is great. And it's everybody, the cast you just mentioned, everybody just brings it to life in such a way. And we all got along. We know I knew Judy Greer, but I had never met Keegan or Johnny or anybody. And we all just hit it off. And Rachel. And it's just, you know, it's a great premise with great cast and really great writing. And it's funny, you know. It you have to sort of push past the initial thing of what, it's a bad sitcom? No, it's not a bad sitcom. It's about a not great sitcom that's coming back, but it's not about that show. And you have to sort of get over that. And people instantly are relieved, like, oh, so we're not watching like, you know, another bad sitcom from the 80s. No, you're not. And for those who it's not really very, it's not necessarily inside baseball, but for those who have worked in half hour television, there are so many things that you go, that's exactly what the writer's room feels like. That's exactly what the craft service table feels like. It's all pretty darn accurate.
You obviously do have the sitcom experience too. You know, My Two Dads, Mad About You, More. And like for you, you also did a reboot of Mad About You as well. So like, did that experience sort of help out with you doing this? Because I feel like you can, like you were saying, there is an authentic feel to it, especially you have the very funny scene where I feel like when your character introduces the old school sitcom writers to the new school sitcom writers and the clashes of different styles of comedy. And I feel like that was extremely like nuanced and well done. Very
funny. Well, some of that did feel right. When we, you know, Helen Hunt and I fought long and hard before we agreed to go back and make, we knew we'd do it once, you know, limited time, 112 episodes. And we for years, we were very convinced we would never, ever do that because we were so happy with how we ended it and so proud of what we did that we didn't want to mess with it. It's like, why? And then we thought, well, it actually would be funny. Well, we knew it would be great fun to work together. And we also knew that we had a great story, which is our child that's been the focus of our life for 20 years has moved on and moved out or is moving out. And what does that do to the marriage? Well, that's a great Mad About You premise. Like, oh, it's us again, but we're old and we're tired and we don't have the same dreams we had in 1992. And when we did the writer's room, one of the things we were very clear about was we didn't want to have a big room. Sometimes it's just 15, 18 people. It's just crazy. And we had, I think, three other writers. It was Helen and myself and Peter Tolan, who's a great, great, terrific writer. And we were the old guys. So we said, let's just get young people. So we had three or four young people. And as much as, you know, we tried at least to be aware that we might not have our finger on the pulse of the moment. But even with the best of intentions, 1,000 times, I would say something or Helen would say something. And one of the 25-year-olds would go, yeah, that's not a thing anymore. Yeah, we don't use that word anymore. It's like, oh, okay. What would you kids say? You know, and we had to write for this 18-year-old character, our daughter. So we had to like make sure she sounded more like an 18-year-old and not like me. Mm-hmm. But the difference, you know, the difference was we got along great, and the cast of Mad About You, we were all so thrilled to be back together, and it wasn't like, hey, this is our second chance, or you know, it was just like, hey, let's just get the band back together and do it. Whereas on Reboot, the whole premise is they all have messed up their lives in one way or another, and they're all coming back and hoping that this will be their redemption. So as funny as it is, there's a lot of depth to the characters and to their stories. And I just watched the other day, I watched it with my son. And it's like, oh, I actually kind of, you care. It's like, oh, it's really funny. And some stuff is just ridiculously funny, but you actually do care. And one of the great things about Steve Levitan, which he did in Modern Family so well, there's a lot of heart, but it's never sappy because it's always undercut with some really funny, stupid thing or some really funny character thing. And it lets to play both sides of the fence is really fun.
Do you there's find though, scene, like
where you're talking to your daughter or your fictional daughter, obviously. And like you're talking to her and like you allowed her to have that one scene in the show that she was really passionate about because obviously the show is reflective of her own upbringing and all that. And like, it's a really sweet moment. And then you open your car door.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's a perfect example. Like we exactly, got to pop it. Yeah. And you know, it's so, yes. I mean, a big part of the show is the generational thing, my generation and her, but it's also so complex because we find out at the end of episode one, she is my daughter. And the original show, Step Right Up, was based on me, you know, my character, launching a new family and making it all sweet and funny and perfect. Well, what I left behind was her, and I sort of sugarcoated everything. And so it's not just that she wants to make sitcoms realistic and true to life. She wants to settle some scores. And, you know, even though she might not admit it, she wants to, you know, heal our relationship. And that, so that's that was really a gold mine because that wasn't in the I don't think that was in the original idea of the show that they would have this intricate relationship. But she's great. She's so funny and smart and it's just really fun to play. And, you know, and age-wise, it works out. It's like, all right, she would be my daughter, basically.
Yeah.
Do you find it, too, like, is it, and maybe there is no difference, is it easier to play a character like, whether it is a Mad About You or a Stranger Things or an Aliens, or you go down the list of things that aren't real, or is it easier to play a role like this where it's like, it's not real, but also it's you, that world is real to you because you literally work in that world, or do you think it because of that?
I'm a big fan of doing things that feel really real. You know, Mad About You, the reason I called my character Paul is like I wouldn't have to act that hard. If you say Paul, I'll know to turn around. You know what I mean? I'm not that clever.
Wait, how many times do you play? How many times have you played yourself in something?
Or no, your first name? Well, I mean, Mad About You is, you know, I tried. I always joke, it's like, oh, I wouldn't have to act too hard. But the reality was, it's like I wanted to take all these stories, some of which was in my stand-up act at the time, but also like so many things any day, you know, you have something happens at home, you go, okay, somebody's got to write this scene. Listen to this fight we had. And so I wanted to keep those channels as unobstructed so that, and it wasn't just me, every writer and every actor too, we would bring into the show stuff that happened. And sometimes deliberately, or sometimes a writer was just talking and the other writers would go, that's next week, put that in. And in this case, it's really a double whammy because I'm not playing myself in Reboot, but having been on a show, having been, you know, it's not a big stretch for me to be like the guy who likes to keep the show how it used to be. And new writers want to change it. It's like, I think I can find that character. You know, I think the character is a little, I like to think I'm a little cleverer and not quite as out of touch as my character. But, you know, in the writer's room, you know, what's really fun on this show is, you know, there's all this talk about, well, you can't say that anymore. You can't get away with that kind of joke anymore. So you end up spending a lot of time. What can you do? And gee, well, let's just go for it and say that thing that's going to ruffle some feathers, or let's soften it, whatever. On Reboot, we get to say it, have somebody else go, hey, can't do it. And then you get to have the conversation, which is to me the fun part. You know, there's one really simple line where I go, hey, an Eskimo? Is that, hey, we don't say Eskimo. When I missed that meeting. Really? Eskimo is off the list now?
You're like, Don Johnson. That was very funny as well.
The Don Johnson. Right. By the way, I had never heard that word. Like, an Eskimo brother went, he doesn't know. I go, no, I don't know what that is. But to me, you don't have to vote. You don't have to say you can say it or you cannot say it, but rather, can we talk about it? Like, why is that offensive and why is not offensive? You know, and I'm not a big fan of offending anybody. I don't, if somebody goes, you can't say that, even if I don't believe it, I go, all right, I don't want to hurt people's feelings. That's not why I got into this business. And as a stand-up, you know, certainly there are guys who are great and comics who love to poke the bear, you know, but that's never been my thing. I want people to go home happy.
The reminder, all of you, check these out on Hulu now. Hilarious show. And we've been talking about it for a few months now. But just speaking of that nostalgia as well, obviously, I mean, I think we can firmly say it was the pop culture moment of 2022 was Stranger Things. And that is a show that is just baked in nostalgia. Like, how for you, especially because the kids in it, they didn't grow up, you know, they weren't alive in the 80s. They weren't alive in that time. For you, like, is there something about that show too, being in that, where it is so heavy with nostalgia from what, like 30, 40 years ago, where it kind of adds this cool element of like almost like dipping back really in the past?
Yeah, it certainly adds something to the show. For me personally, it's like my character, my storylines, you know, have very little interaction. I'm not listening to music. I'm not out there, you know, I'm in a lab or I'm getting...
He should have a song, though. He needs it. You got to have...
I need my Kate Bush
song, yeah.
But, you know, I did a show for a couple of seasons on Amazon called Red Oaks, which was very nostalgic, very, very miles different from Stranger Things. It was about a country club, and I played the sort of the president of the country club. There's big fish in a very little pond. And it was very specifically 80s-centric. And I didn't relate to it as much, but people who were 15, 20 years younger than me loved that. They go, oh, because that was their thing. And my thing would have been like, okay, if it was late 60s, early 70s, those are the films that speak to me. You know, those are the moments. So it depends where your sweet spot is. Where were your formative years? You know, it's not necessarily where you were at five, but, you know, where were you coming of age? Where were you getting out in the world? And so for me, the 80s was like I was already out in the world. So my nostalgia was earlier.
That makes sense. You're essentially, though, just out of curiosity, because you're a protagonist in what's essentially the most popular show on earth. I was just curious for you if that gave you a lot of street cred with, like, you know, your kids or family members or anything like that, more than maybe anything else.
You know, with your kids, it lasts about a minute, if that. My son, you know, I have two boys, and my younger son is 22 now. He told me about Stranger Things. Like, he watched it the hour that it came out, like on a Friday. And then that Monday, I got a call. So he told me about it. He said, hey, have you heard of the show Stranger Things? I went, no. I went, when did it come out? He said, 3:00. I went, oh, how cool are you? So ironically, that Monday, 2 days later, I get a call from my agent. He said, are you familiar with this new show, Stranger
Things? That's crazy.
And I went, yeah, I don't live in a cave. Of course I am.
I'm an expert.
And he goes, well, good, because the Duffer brothers want to meet you. I went, oh, really? And then, so he was kind of impressed for a second. He goes, oh, that's really cool. Cut to, so season two, I was in season two. So then it comes out, and we were talking about it one day, and I said, you know, it's really not the kind of show I would tune into. It's like, that's not my... what I tune in to watch. I said, I certainly would have watched season one of Stranger Things just because you have to. Everybody's talking about it. I want to see, and it's great. I said, left alone, I said, I don't know that I would have watched season two. And he said, with no trace of irony, he said, you know, Dad, that's true. I would have enjoyed season two a lot more if you were not in it. And I said, asshole, I hear you when you say that. You understand that it came out of your mouth. So... I remember hearing Springsteen do an interview, and he talked about his kids. He said, they maybe know two of his songs. I went, you got to work hard to only know two songs. because he's like, he's Bruce Springsteen. But to them, he goes, Dad, don't wear that shirt.
I've never heard that, but as two people right here without, not married without kids, I'm going to remember that. We should remember that. If Springsteen can't get his kids to like his work, that's to be okay for everyone. Then I feel like that's the bar.
Yeah, and all the things, you know, and you hold on to all these things that, you know. Yes, I have kids, and it's a journey. But I try really hard to remember, and I think I remember well what I was going through at their age, at 27, at 22, and therefore I'll be very cool. And I'll be, you know, it's like, yeah, but that's not your job. Your job is you got to be the other guy. You got to be the old guy in this scenario. And, you know, it's funny, it took me a while. I would read scripts, you know, not recently, but I would say 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I'd get a script and I go, oh, that's a cool kid, this 25-year-old who meets the girl. Oh, I'm playing the kid's father. I'm not this. Oh, it's like in my head, I go, so I'm the 25-year-old. No, you're not, asshole. You're the kid's father. Okay. Got it.
It should be like,
so it's a transition.
I think one of them convinced you on The Boys, too. I remember reading once, because, or at least the vulgarity of it. I heard one of them helped.
Yeah, no, it was my same son. He said, you know, he's my cultural canary in the coal mine.
There you go.
And I said, and I never heard of The Boys. And I said, I just got a call. I said, they want me to be on this show, The Boys. Have you heard of it? He said, yeah, it's great, comma, you'll hate it. I went, that sounds like right up my alley. Perfect. I should get on that show that I'm going to hate. And then I watched it and I went, oh, I know what he means. It's wild.
Yeah.
But you know what? But you got to appreciate when somebody does something well, even if it's not your taste, you go, okay, these guys are good. And they really, oh, they're being graphic and over the top on purpose. That's their thing. Got it. It's not casual. It's not by accident that they, you know, they're wildly offensive.
Yeah.
But it's a really smart show and the writing of it, you know, and they lace in a lot of really current political and social strings without tripping over them. It's not easy to do.
I'd love to give you a couple questions about Aliens. It's a show I've been talking about like nonstop, I feel like, for the last month, telling people about it because James Cameron's in the news a lot recently because of
Avatar. Dropped a new trailer today.
He did drop a new trailer today.
For Avatar?
Avatar, yeah. 2, yeah.
But am I in it? No, I'm not in it. Am I in it?
Maybe. I don't know. They have cast members all the time.
You would think I would know, right? I'll see it when it comes out. I'm sure.
Signed on for it though. Like, you were mostly known for comedy at the time.
Yeah.
What made you want to try out like a character that was this like sleazy? Because I also read that too, that your family did not vibe with your character, you know, at all.
I'll let you in a little secret. I don't think any of us people, actors that you know from TV and movie, I don't think we sit at home going, you know, next I'd like to do a period piece. No, you like something comes along, you go, oh shit, that's great. And I just auditioned. They said they want to see you audition for Aliens. And it's funny, I remembered my wife at the time, who's my girlfriend, she had just moved out and we were moving into our first house. And I got this call, you got to go down to 20th Century Fox and meet James Cameron. I was like, I knew James Cameron. And I go, I remember we were moving because I had to go onto the moving truck and find the box with pants, because I said I can't go. Give me that box. I got to put pants on, and give me that box. Had shirts, and I was throwing stuff together. And I went down and mentioned Cameron, and I read the script, and it's clear this is a mega hit, which you never know, except for here you did. I saw the first Aliens. I knew how great that was. I saw Terminator, and I knew James Cameron, how great he was. I'm like, oh my God, this is just, if you've ever read it, let's off the page. I mean, now, well, you've already seen the movie, so you know, but literally you can see it. It's written almost comic book, short sentences, haiku, you know, metal scraping sound. It's like, you know, it's not sentences. It's just like, oh, I see it. I hear it. I smell it. I remember it was the first script I ever read, only script I've ever read that I had to put down. And go, hold on. Okay. What, you know, it was intense on the page, and then you know he has the skill to bring it to life. So I remember I auditioned, it was like July, and then I forgot about it because I didn't hear anything, which is 99 out of 100 times that's what happens. You go, man, I guess I didn't get it. I guess I would have heard if I'm in it. And I was doing some other show in October, and my manager came down to the set and they go, you're going to London. I said, why am I going to London? Because you got the part in Aliens. Really? So I didn't question it. Like, you know, Mr. Cameron, I'm generally known as a comedic actor, you know, I'm not going to say, but by the way, that was also his thinking, as I understand it. He wanted somebody, and I wasn't particularly widely known. I had done Diner and Beverly Hills Cop. That was it. I think, maybe some other crappy movies, but I wasn't terribly widely known, but to whatever extent I was as a comic. So I think part of his thing was, let me get somebody that the audience won't suspect, you know, there'll be a lightness or a jovialness to him. And, you know, I don't know how successfully that worked, because I think the minute I showed up, people go, this guy's no good. This guy, something's not right with this guy. Why is he? It's like the guest star on Star Trek. Like, he'll be dead soon. He's not going to be back next week. This guy.
But was there like excitement for you guys around this because of like Terminator? Because you had seen it. I know he had the whole like kind of gripe with the leftover Ridley Scott crew in England. Like they didn't want him to be the director of it because they didn't know any of his work. But were you guys like excited to work with him? Or were you like nervous about the success of Alien, because following up something that's that much of like a mega hit is like nerve wracking to a degree?
You know, again, I don't think we're that clever or confident enough to go, hope this is a hit. I'm like, no. First of all, like I said, I knew this was going to be a hit. And my job is like, okay, here's your part. Just do this as well as you can and don't screw up the whole movie. Because if you show up, people go, check, please. That's no good. So I certainly didn't have doubts. Even if I had doubts, by the way, the director was tough. I'll roll the dice. I'm in a big movie. It's a big multi-million-dollar movie for Fox, the sequel to Alien. Yeah. What am I going to think about it? But it was James Cameron, it was Sigourney Weaver. And so I was nervous about my part of it, my piece of the pie. It's like, can I be good? Can I do what I need to do? It was interesting. I remember the first, just the way the shooting schedule was, I didn't have any lines for like the first 2 weeks that I was shooting. I was just in the background. And as a comic, I'll just look at my lines and go, okay, I know how to make that funny, or I know how to talk. Like, now you're not talking. So what the hell are you doing? And it made me actually, it was a great experience as an actor. Like, you can be doing something in the scene without doing anything. And it doesn't mean twirling your mustache or, you know, stealing the scenery. It's just, who are you? What are you doing? To the extent that I didn't bring the film to a grinding halt, I would consider that a success.
Love that.
That's the benchmark there. One more movie I want to bring up, because I love when we get a chance to talk to people who've worked for directors that we admire right now. But I don't think we've talked to anyone. You've only had, what, three movies now? That's been in a Damien Chazelle movie. You were in Whiplash, one of the best movies, period, probably the last 15, 20 years. Is there a certain style that he has that separates him? He's made three wildly different movies. He's got Babylon coming out soon. But yeah, you're kind of the one that's still considered like his crown jewel so far.
Yeah, well, that's another one where I remember reading that script and going, it really reads... No, you know what? Before I read the script, they sent me a DVD. He had made a sample, a 17 minute, but it was the purpose was he wanted to show people what the film looked like and what he can do and raise the funds to make a full movie. I hadn't read the script. I just saw the 17 minute film and it was breathtaking. Oh my God. And it was J.K. Simmons. It wasn't Miles Teller. It was another really good young actor. But the camera work, the script, the intensity that was there, and I literally thought, well, why is he going to make this into a feature? This is great. This is like the best 17-minute movie I've ever seen. And then they sent me the script, and I went, oh, I get it. So because there was no father in the 17, so I was talking myself out of a job. I'm like, and so there was no father in that short one. But when I read it, and it's like, okay, he's fleshing it out. Now I get that. That was literally like the 17-minute middle sequence where he throws the chair and that first horrible rehearsal section. And I met with him. It was a great role. It was beautifully written. It wasn't, you know, a lot of work. I don't think I'd worked 5 days on that, maybe six. And the part was small, but it was beautifully written. And he was freaking 26. And I literally have things in my refrigerator older than you. I mean, you know, he was not reeking of show business or, you know, some guys you can feel the UCLA NYU film school-ness coming out of them. And he wasn't any of that. He was just really chill. And he wrote this beautiful script, and he was a musician himself. So it was, I don't think he had a teacher like that, but it was built on the experiences. And so I knew, again, I knew this was going to be great. Unlike Aliens, I had no reason to think it would be a hit. I thought, oh, J.K. Simmons is great. I didn't know Miles. But I knew Damien and I knew the script. I said, well, this is going to be beautiful, if nothing else. And I certainly know how to do this. And when I saw the first time I saw it was at it premiered at Sundance. It was the event that kicked off Sundance that year. And it was in, you know, it had the two prestigious. It was like the opening event and it was in the big theater. It was like a 2000 seat theater. And it played like Aliens. And people were grabbing arms of people next to them. Like, oh, no. He's not going to throw the chair. Oh, fuck. He threw the chair. I love that. And it was breathtaking. It went, this is a movie about a music teacher. And a little bit the kid and the father, but this kid and the music teacher. And he was able to turn that. And that to me is kind of my favorite thing. You know, so yes, I'm in Aliens and Stranger Things, and I get the scope of those things. But to me, when you can get intensity from really small scale, that's what life is, right? I mean, it's father and son and teacher and you know, and the role that was so appealing about it to me was, and as a father, I know this is like, your kid is a certain age, they're going to do what they're going to do. And you can't really control it. And it's painful to watch sometimes. And that's what was in the script. Like, oh, I can't kill the teacher and I can't lock my kid in the basement. So I just going to have to wish for the best. And that's a very tough position that parents are in. You'll see someday, or you won't.
Much. Wish us luck in that department. Last thing before I let you go, very quickly related to that, though, your character in that movie, it's a back and forth tweet between your character and your son in the movie, but it mixes candy into the popcorn. Are you a candy in your popcorn guy? Or are you just plain regular popcorn, no candy in it?
Here's the funny thing. I am a strictly popcorn guy. But for years, I had a running, I wouldn't say a fight, but a animated conversation with my friend Helen Hunt, who was a big fan of, I can't remember, that was Junior Mints, I think M&M's. I would say, but why, you understand why you're ruining the popcorn and you're ruining the M&M's. They're both great, but it's like, I'm not a fan of fruit and Jell-O. I'm not a fan of mixing. I don't like an M&M peanut. I don't like a peanut M&M. I like a peanut. I like an M&M. I will get them. If I want them both, I'll take them both. It always struck me as a thing. And so there was a scene that had to be cut because we didn't have enough time where they're walking, where Miles and me are walking out of the theater and we had this conversation. And so whatever was in that scene, we had to sort of put into the theater itself. And I thought, well, what, that would be a really tiny but true thing that a father wants his son, this is how you eat popcorn. You know? And so I was willing to take the other side of the fence. I took Helen's side. And he's run down. I go, oh, actually, no. What was it? Did I mix it or he?
I think it was either one of them. I just know your comment. It's one of my favorite lines of the movie. You just go, you're like, I thought you liked it. He goes, no, I only do that because you.
Oh, yeah. No, and I said, mix it up. And he says something like, I don't like it. And I said, what's the matter with you? Or I don't understand you. And we just like, of all the things to fight about with your child. Like, yes, M&M's with the popcorn. Oh, have you learned nothing? Have you learned nothing from me?
I love it.
Those are the things. Yeah.
Thank you so much. This was a wonderful time. Reboot, Hulu. Check it out. Absolutely. This was. I hope we get to talk to you again.
We will do it again. Tell your people. Is anybody watching this, by the way?
Do people watch it? It's not live. It'll be later. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Tell them. So one of the things that nobody has seen, or 11 people have seen, is I did a show 5 years ago called There's Johnny, which is on Peacock now. And it's I'm not in it, but I wrote it with a buddy of mine. And it's about a period in my life was important to me in 72. It takes place at the Tonight Show, Johnny Carson's Tonight Show. And it's about a young kid who is enamored with Johnny Carson. His family loves Johnny. And through some funny circumstances, he ends up landing a job. And it's so these fictitious characters, but taking place in the real world. And we use actual clips of the Tonight Show that they're offensively filming, but it's one of those shows where thank goodness for streaming, because at least it can live now. And people, anybody who watches it going, where was this? I go, yeah, you missed it. It was on, I think it was on Hulu originally or somewhere else. But we can talk about that next time, and hopefully we'll have
we'll hold you to that.
All right, you're on. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Take care. Yeah. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks to Paul. We're Ken Jack and I on a first name basis with Paul Reiser now.
He was really funny. Like, and that show, like, I'd seen the on the banner for Hulu and stuff, and I was like, I'll get to it. I'm not sure if I'm into something that's like kind of meta in this sense. I watched it before the interview. Genuinely pretty funny show.
He had a good breakdown of even talking. He's like, you know, nowadays everything's like, can you say this? Can you not say this? He's like, the kind of the fun part of the show is that we can say it.
Exactly. Like, and then that they like, cop out is that they can just say like, oh, well, it's on purpose.
We can kind of be edgy, but in a way that's like also acceptable. Yeah, it was kind of. But then all the alien stuff. And it was a fun interview. He had some cool stories.
Any Whiplash questions?
We did. We talked about Whiplash.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we talked about Whiplash. Talked about him meeting Candy in the theater, putting the candy in the popcorn, and he talked about Damien Chazelle. It was cool. He talked about James Cameron. It was a neat interview. Next up, two reviews: Enola Holmes 2 and Weird. Let's start out with Enola Holmes 2, the sequel to Enola Holmes, which came out 2 years ago.
2020.
Yeah, yep. Which we really liked. Really liked Enola Holmes. Enola Holmes takes on her first case as a detective, but to unravel the mystery of a missing girl, she'll need some help from friends and her brother Sherlock. Millie Bobby Brown is back as Enola Holmes. Henry Cavill back as Sherlock Holmes. Great hair once again from Henry Cavill. He's great at the hair, the floppy hair in the front of his face.
Oh, yeah.
He has made that his signature thing. David Thewlis, Harry Potter, speaking of.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Potter the Legend.
Oh, yeah.
Not in enough. That character was just simply kind of cast aside too much.
Great in the book, too, Lupin.
Great in the character. Right. That's what I've gathered. People would say like Lupin was a little more significant, should have been more in the movies. Sharon Duncan Brewster was also in Dune.
Yep.
She got stabbed in Dune, but then she pulled him into the fucking worm. Should I allude? Helena Bonham Carter back. I just read the synopsis. It's getting pretty well-liked, favorable marks and reviews. I think this was an anticipated release, at least in terms of Netflix stuff. Very high critic score, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's too high.
Yeah.
Well, what are we doing here?
93% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, 82% audience score. But the actual rating, where do they have? They probably have like the Bs. I liked Enola Holmes too, but I definitely did not like it as much as I wanted to like it.
Yeah.
I gave the first one an 84, then Kendrick gave the first one an 89, but we both liked it like a very similar amount. Enola Holmes 2 has a lot of stuff that's really enjoyable and fun, but I think too much stuff. I think it's just simply too many things. I'm kind of just throwing like a dart here, and I think this is kind of my ceiling. I'm going to watch it again because I did enjoy it, but I kind of want to like – I always kind of watch things once or twice. This is in like the 77 to 80 range for me because I really liked it and there's a lot of good stuff, but man, this could have been so much better and it's just not as good as the first one. I like that they involved Henry. Like the things they did to make a second movie, I like the attempt, but it was just too much. Mm-hmm. Like I like that Henry Cavill was more involved with Sherlock Holmes, but it kind of muddies the story up a bit. I think they could have, I don't know the best way to describe it. I think they could have maybe – I get why her detective stuff is separate than his because it's her story. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to involve him, I think you kind of have to go all out and do it.
Yeah, have them actually work together.
Like I think they have to kind of work together, which I think they will in the next one.
Although she did explicitly deny him when he asked her to like do a detective interview with him.
That is true. But like I think in order to make it work, you kind of have to have them work together. Maybe not the whole movie. And they do work together, but it kind of felt like too many – different things happening, and it sort of made it a little unfocused at times.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird because what we got I actually really did enjoy, and I think she's great in the role. Like Millie Bobby Brown's great in it, and I think he's a very fun young Sherlock Holmes too. So yeah, that's kind of my range for 77-80 range. I haven't like fully decided where I'm gonna land on it yet, but I did enjoy it. Like I think it's very much worth a watch, and if you like the first one, I do think you will like this though. But I wish it was better. I wish that they've kind of improved on it because I think the pieces they have here are all great. And here's a good mark for it. I'm excited for the next one.
Yes. That's what I was going to lead off with. This may not be the best movie ever, but I'm invested in this franchise. And it feels like the actors in the main roles are very invested in it too. Like you can tell Millie Bobby Brown and Henry Cavill are having the time of their lives playing these characters. Like, they have fun doing this. Like, Henry Cavill, he looks happy as he's ever looked. I mean, I want him to continue to play Sherlock. Fuck all the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle heads who get mad at this franchise. They exist, by the way. Found them on Twitter. They were like,
not surprising.
They like do not like this franchise, but it's just fun. Like, it is what Netflix should be always striving for when it comes to their movies, is just cheap, fun action, something you can flip on and watch with the family, nice little adventure, some jokes here and there. It's just a good time. I would land at 65 for my score. I didn't like it nearly as much as you did, Jeff. I think there's a lot of issues in the movie. I don't think it's nearly as funny as the first one. And I do think it's very unorganized. It's all over the map. In the last 20 minutes, boy, do they drag. Boy, do they drag in that last 20 minutes. Yeah. There's like a second ending that
there is a second ending. That's the worst, right?
Yeah. I mean, it keeps going for a little bit. And you're kind of like,
they did a Morpo Blorpo moment. You know, post credit with what's his name coming and being like, "Hi, I'm Watson, Himesh Patel, Dr. Yes. John yeah. Watson."
I'm not gonna lie, it worked for me. I did,
ultimate Morpo Blorpo.
I gave an audible, "Let's go!" Like, I was like,
"You gave a let's go."
Yeah, it's like John Watson.
You gave
baby.
The same reaction to Joe Mixon's Mixon's fifth touchdown yesterday that you did to John Watson showing up in a post credit.
Yeah,
did.
Which yeah. Well, see, the funny thing is when you tweeted that, I was like, well, it can't be Watson then, because that's just the most obvious predictable thing of all time. So I thought it was going to be like, I don't even know. I thought it was going to be like fucking League of Extraordinary Gentlemen type crossover. I thought we were going to get like Dr. Jekyll or just something. Watson. I was like, that's just fucking
back together. Let's
Dr. Watson. Like, I don't know. Like,
you got to have Dr. Watson.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to be a good Dr. Watson too. I think that was a nice little scene, but
yeah.
Oh, I forgot we have Black Panther tonight. That's totally non sequitur, but I just forgot that we had
also
that tonight.
The reveal that bringing in Moriarty this early in the franchise and having her just get caught immediately. I didn't really love that, because that is like his big villain. Like, I feel like they got her way too easy, right?
Mm. She got away. She kind of just wasn't that the thing they said?
Gave herself. Yes, she to get
but,
away.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they caught her. More or less. Which I thought was a little strange. I didn't think they'd bring her in. I thought that was just going to be a tease during the movie and then set up for the next one. But yeah, 65 out of 100. Seems like a low score, but it is a very fun movie to watch. If you like the first one, this is worth watching the second one. And I'm excited to, like Jeff said, I'm very excited to see what comes next with the Enola Holmes 3 and maybe a Sherlock spinoff. Who knows? Feels like they have something here.
Ken, Jack, where do you have it?
So I landed on a 71. I think that the familiar beats of the movie were still like pretty good. The humor was okay. Definitely not nearly as funny as the last one, like you were saying, Gooch. The mystery itself, like, was intriguing enough, especially for one that's not based on any existing Sherlock Holmes lore or anything like that. I think what dragged this down for me watching it from where the original was at was that I got lost in the sauce of like performative posturing a lot, where like the first one, it didn't feel the need to say a lot of things out loud. They just show you, hey, Enola Holmes is a woman that's brilliant, badass, and that's what makes her a great female hero. That's it. Nothing needs to be said. Nothing needs to be put out loud, any of that shit. And this one, you know, they set it in the middle of a women's strike. They make Moriarty a woman that's only evil because women don't get a fair shake. And they changed Enola to being like a suffragette, which also has one weakness, which is a guy and her crush on a boy. Like, that felt to me very performative and very gross. And that brought down the score for me a lot. But other than that, I think Millie Bobby Brown is so good in this role. Like, she's perfect. Yep. Absolutely perfect. Henry Cavill, who initially I was like, I don't know how well he's going to play like this super
big
smart detective.
Jacked, yeah, this just big boulder of a man.
Massive Henry Cavill still works. I agree with you and both of you guys in that, like, I think that his addition and being like almost a sort of co-star in this one versus being in the peripheral of the last one definitely kind of made it a little disjointed. And that kind of dragged down the movie for me a little bit as well. But other than that, again, there's a lot of fun. David Thewlis is a good bad guy. He did a lot of, if any of you had seen Fargo, I think it was season 2, David Thewlis in that, it reminded me a lot of his character in that season. He was awesome. A lot of the other side smaller characters were all good. The way that they unraveled the mystery, I thought was solid as well. Just like, you don't need to kind of fall into that really gross, hollow, performative activism. And that to me, it just felt nasty. But other than that, I really enjoyed a lot of the fun aspects of it.
Yeah. And Chris, let's get your thoughts. But I think that's the big thing for me, too, going back on it, is I think Millie Bobby Brown is so good in this role that I don't think you need to convolute it and make it like it's a mystery. So it needs to have complications, like a mystery element to it. But I don't think you need let her shine with the charm. You don't overcomplicate the story, right?
Yeah, she's a very cool, strong, capable character without her having to look at the camera and say, I'm a cool, strong, capable character who doesn't need help.
Like, and that's a woman, and that doesn't need a man to help me, even though she kind of does, because, again, it revolves around her crush on Lord Tewksbury or whatever. So,
yeah, Lord Tewksbury.
Lord Goofball.
Yeah.
Chris.
Lord Fleshy British Goofball.
I'm very similar in terms of how I feel about this to all you guys. I think it's a well-made movie. I think it's well-intentioned. Now, okay, this is a little sidebar here, and I'm not going to rip her too much because, you know, she's fucking 18. Millie Bobby Brown annoys the shit out of me, but I think she's a really talented actress, and I think she's going to be like a massive, massive megastar. I was watching this thinking, you know what she is? She's what we thought Chloe Moretz was going to be. Like, she's just a like really charismatic performer, good actress. And she's excellent in this role. My big issue, and this has been a running theme since I've been on this podcast, why the fuck is Enola Holmes 2 hours long? I mean, what are we doing? Because that's another problem, is that I can't tell if this series wants to be catered more towards like that young adult crowd, like that teenage boy, teenage girl crowd, or if it wants to be something that's a little bit more adult. Like, it's PG-13. I feel like, you know, it's basically a Nancy Drew mystery. Like, I don't really understand why it's, you know, I think tonally it's a little bit off. But, you know, it has its fun moments, like the way it's directed. And really, your central performer carries this whole thing. So, I mean, like, I always go a little bit lower than you guys just anyway. I have it at an even 60, but, like, I do think more people will enjoy this. Then they won't. You know, it's a very difficult movie to dislike just because the actors and the characters are having so much fun. And look, I think the mystery genre, Knives Out, it was a big reason for this, is kind of back into the forefront now. And I think it's a perfect genre to put on something like Netflix, where people can kind of just sit back on a Sunday afternoon and watch it. So, yeah, a mild recommendation from me. You know, I wasn't crazy about it, but I definitely see the merits and I see the appeal.
I hate complaining about time. I really don't. Like, if you listen to the podcast long enough, you know, I like long movies. I don't like making the time argument, but I think you can almost mold the time argument into an argument about just the story. It's just too much story. Like, I think that's the thing. Yeah, it's like
kind of one and the same. Yeah.
I think that's the thing here. It's not like it's one story that's too long. It's like you have too many things here. Like, you can tighten it down. It's not even about the length. Like, it's like, make it more focused, and I think naturally the story probably becomes a little shorter. But it was just too many things, and it had a lot, like, the storytelling element of, like, how they would show things and they would rewind and kind of show you. Like, I think that works, but I think it's, like, maybe one too many times. It's just – it's too much stuff here, and I think you need to let it be a little loose, more loose and fun, because she's so good in that role, and so was Cavill, too.
Mm-hmm. And I would also argue a lot of that stuff, like the reverse going back – and flashbacks, flash forwards is, I think, very derivative of the Guy Ritchie movies.
I do feel like they definitely are fans of the Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes movies, because you can feel a lot of that charm in there.
Yeah.
I mean, I still want the third one, which has been rumored out there for forever. No.
We'll get there.
We'll watch it. I just want Netflix to do more of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, Red Notice and things like that, they just feel so hollow, where the actors are just showing up for a paycheck. You can tell the writers weren't very invested in it. Like, you can just feel the emptiness behind that movie. Whereas this, you can, even if it doesn't land, you can feel that everyone behind the scenes and everyone on screen are invested to a degree in what's happening. So yeah. No, more of it. Give me more Holmes. Fuck you, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Doyle hits.
So we're kind of all in the same spot. This is in the C range for basically all of our thoughts. Kind of like in that like mid tier level, not as good as the first one, but still, like, if you tell us they're making more, I'm saying, okay, that's good. I think that's kind of where we all land. After that, let's talk about Roku's movie, Weird, the Al Yankovic story. Daniel Radcliffe is Weird Al, and an unexaggerated true story about the greatest musician and sex symbol of our time, Evan Rachel Wood, Rainn Wilson. I like this quite a bit. I will say, there is definitely, like, You could definitely suggest this to somebody who may not know or care like Weird Al and be like, what the fuck was that, dude? It is parody to the absolute capital P of the word parody. Like, this is a parody. I had a fucking blast of it. It's very fun. It's not perfect by any means. You know, it's not the greatest musical comedy thing ever. This ain't no pop star, you know, but it's still pretty good. I mean, if we're talking about which one I like more out of these two movies, I definitely like this one more. I think this was actually really well done. It was funny. I don't think the jokes got tired. I was worried that the joke was going to get tired very quickly. Like, but then again, it's like this was made off a fake trailer from Funny or Die.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it still worked. And that's what I said about Ted Lasso. You're like, they made it off a fucking NBC Sports commercial where he coached Tottenham. But it ended up being it's been a good show. So somehow they stretched that fake. Was it Aaron Paul who was Weird Al in the Funny or Die thing?
Yeah.
They somehow made it work. I like this like a lot. Like, I really, I'm curious how I'll feel in repeat viewing, but I laughed the whole time. It kind of kept me on my toes in terms of like the turns it would take, because it's so ridiculous and exaggerated. But it's that perfect layer of like, wow, I can, like, this is obviously fake, but perfectly fake and parodied. I liked it a lot. I gave it an 84. I really enjoyed it. Ken Jack.
I landed on an 81. I really enjoyed a ton about this movie. I think a lot of it just kind of revolves around the way that they decided to sort of structure it. Like, their takes on the history of Weird Al and like the way that they kind of like adjusted a lot of stuff. Like, for example, one thing I loved a lot about it was that Weird Al invented Beat It or Eat It before Beat It. Like, that killed me. A lot of really cool little scenes in there with cameos that like didn't feel like, we talked about a minute ago, like Morpo Plurpo stuff, where it's like Jack Black showing up as like Wolfman Jack or some shit. Like, all these different characters that like I have to like Google to figure out who they are. And but that's fine with a streaming movie, right? Like, if this was in a theater, that would be like, it'd be like, I don't know who the fuck Wolfman Jack is. And then, but getting to watch it at home and like look up all these people on the fly was very fun. David Delmastikin showing up as like the dude from Queen, very funny. All these other little cameos from smaller dudes, they crushed me. Specifically, Evan Rachel Wood, I think, big highlight of this movie. She had just a blast making this. You could tell all of them did, but like, you could tell she really just had fun doing a role that isn't fucking Westworld, like Doom and Gloom.
R.I.P. It got canceled.
R.I.P. our dog Westworld.
going out with a fart.
Yeah. But there's a lot of very funny stuff with this. I think Daniel Radcliffe was like I was afraid he would be the main vessel of the movie, but he really wasn't. You know what I mean? Like, it was really the surrounding of him was what was more important. The third act definitely dragged a little bit. Like, the first like two thirds was like very like everything snappy, funny, joke. And then like the third was like a little bit more slowed down. But other than that, very funny. I had a ton of out loud laughs during it all the way throughout. Landing on like, I'd say an 80 out of 100 for me. Very happy with how it worked out, especially because I think for us, I don't think any of us expected this out of Roku. Anything from Roku, like their first major movie, and it's just actually pretty good. And especially after their decision to buy fucking the Quibi catalog, I was like, I don't know creatively if these guys know what the fuck they're doing, but I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, no, I'm actually at the same exact score, 80. Is it the funniest movie I've seen this year? No, but it is very funny, and it gets me to laugh out loud multiple times throughout the film. It's very funny. Like you said, the first two-thirds act, they're just continually raising the absurdity of the movie. Mm-hmm. And it works. Like, by the time you're in, where's Columbia, and he's shooting at Pablo, you're just kind of like, all right, this is just perfect. Evan Rachel Wood was born to play Madonna. I don't know if you've ever heard her sing. Actually, Madonna, she sounds just like her.
That's awesome.
It's insane. So she clearly has had this on her radar for a while. Her playing, I mean, basically the real life Madonna, if we want to be honest for a second, the kind of
absurd,
personal, like just always advancing herself Madonna. Very funny. It's not Walk Hard, but it is just great. It's a good time if you have Roku, or if you don't, because Weird Al basically said go pirate it.
That was very funny.
Make sure you watch it, because it's like we don't get a lot of comedies like this anymore. This felt very throwback to the 2008 to 2012 era of Lonely Island, your Walk Hards, your Hot Rods. Like, it's very absurdist deadpan humor. And it's funny. It's very funny. The Beat It versus Eat It. So
very good.
She's like, it won't be a problem being attached to that Michael Jackson kid for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So funny.
Oh, a lot of lines that never, they felt like they teetered on the line of doing LCB 90s episode, but they never passed it.
Right. You know, and I think that's my biggest comment of it. Like, this, off the in the beginning, I was like, this is funny. But I had a moment where I go, holy shit, this could get real bad though. I go, this but it never did. It never did that.
Never crossed the line.
Yeah. Chris, thoughts. Are you a Weird Al guy?
Oh yeah. Is anyone not? I mean,
true. I guess that's true.
He has to have one of the highest approval ratings of any celebrity.
For sure.
Like, who in the world have you ever met who goes, oh, I fucking hate Weird Al? Like
no one.
Do you kick puppies too? Like, you fucking lunatic. But I enjoy this. I was loving it. Like, top 10 potential of the year loving it the first 45 minutes. I was laughing because, dude, I'm a fan of silly shit. I just laugh at silliness. Like, a little behind the scenes, to me, the hardest I've ever laughed in a movie theater was the scene in This Is the End where Danny McBride and James Franco were talking about jerking off on each other, the porno mag scene. Like, that's the shit that makes me laugh. And I was laughing so hard at this for the first 45 to 50 minutes when the guy, what's his name? He was a polka dot man. And
Dave Domaskin.
Yes. When he shows up, he's like, I'm from Queen. Yeah,
I played the bass in Queen.
Oh, yeah, that was fucking hysterical to me.
He's like, oh yeah, he's like, I'd love for you to perform at Live Aid with us last night. And he's like, wow, that's something.
Fuck no, get him the fuck out of here.
You're Rick Tacoma as Pee Wee Herman, by the way. Also, what the fuck?
That was hilarious. I really thought the movie was bogged down by the Madonna subplot, and that's not Evan Rachel Wood's fault. She's good and she gives it her all. I just thought that was the movie kept going from one note joke to one note joke, but it elongated that note. Mm-hmm. I felt like,
yeah.
And ultimately you get to the fucking Pablo Escobar stuff. Now I thought the final scene and the final title crawl, was really funny. just cause I mean, just again, silliness, it made no sense. So, I mean, it's my you guys know my ratings. I mean, I don't even know what to say. To me, it's like a 6.5 out of 10. So, like, to me, it's a 65, but it's a 65 recommendation. Like, I do like this movie. I think it is such complete silliness that it's worthy of one watch. I think it's just, again, a little bit more trimming around the edges, and this could have been like an elite comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's one of those weird movies that's tough to judge because the things that about it that don't work, you almost wonder, are they intentional? Like, I'll be honest, and I mean this as a compliment, bizarrely, like, Daniel Radcliffe doesn't even make an attempt to act like Weird Al. Like, he's not good at all.
I like that they didn't try to do that, though. You know what I mean?
Right, but that's the thing. In turn, it makes him good in the role because they're clearly not trying to – they don't want him to be doing Jamie Foxx's Ray. You know what I mean? Like, where he's just beat for beat, you know, capturing the mannerisms. So another mild recommendation. I do like it more than the previous movie we talked about. I do like it more than Enola Holmes, and I think that mainstream audiences are really going to enjoy this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The scene, you know, was actually sneakily kind of good in this in a limited role is Rainn Wilson. I thought
Dr. Wilson was
pretty funny in this, specifically the scene where like he tries to adopt Weird Al.
He's like, just actually
meet up with my dad like right 5 minutes ago, and he's like, oh, that's okay.
Cool.
That was
that's cool. Yeah. It's good.
That shit was very funny. There's a lot of good stuff in this. I like, you know what line really killed, or what part killed me was when he does his genesis. Like, by the way, all the times that they showed like the genesis of any of his songs was hilarious.
Yeah.
But specifically the one where he did my baloney and or my bologna, and he sends in. Oh, sorry, my guy. Who's?
It was just a bit of an echo there.
Gotcha.
My screen cut off.
Gotcha. So like, any time that they're showing, or the time that they showed that when he sent in the demo and he's like, it's like, it's not like they're just going to make it into an instant mega hit that everyone's going to love. And then a second later on the radio, welcome to this instant mega hit everyone's going to love. Like that stuff, it just was funny to me. And I think that they found a way to toe that line of absurdity and like, I don't know, I guess we would call it jumping the shark, like in like 90s episode LCB, but they towed it well and I liked it a lot.
Just so absurd. Just everything and the bandmates just coming out. He's like, I didn't know you guys could play. He's like, didn't seem relevant.
Yep.
Didn't seem relevant to the plot until now.
Mm-hmm. You know what was the thing that made me laugh was the, like, they keep referencing this factory that his dad works at and they just keep calling it the factory.
Yep. And they won't say what it is.
You need to go. It's like the family business. Like, keep going back to the factory. Yeah. I thought that was fun.
Mm-hmm. What is your all's favorite Weird Al song? Like,
The Phantom Menace parody.
Yeah, probably mine too. I just grew up with that so much.
He does a better.
Is that the American Pie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he does a better job of explaining the plot of Phantom Menace than George Lucas did. Like he almost makes it seem like a movie that isn't a complete mess.
Yeah. He's very coherent.
What's yours?
I like Amish Paradise.
Yeah, I mean Amish Paradise is a standard great funny. Pick.
It's very funny. I mean, just hilarious. It was a little awkward during the Coolio part.
Yeah,
it was like he just passed away.
Maybe they delayed it a little bit for that. I don't know.
Yeah, so we're all kind of in the same spot with all both these movies today.
Lights, Camera, Barstool is sponsored by BetterHelp. Unfortunately, life doesn't come with a user manual, so when it's not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck. Navigating any of life's challenges can make you feel unsure, whether it's career change, new relationship, or becoming a parent. Therapists are trained to help you figure out the causes of your challenging emotions and help you learn productive coping skills, which makes therapy the closest thing to a guided tour of the complex engine called you.
I've talked about it before, but I used BetterHelp over the pandemic because I couldn't get to my actual therapist's office. Really, really helpful, and there's a lot of great options behind it. And whether it's helping you learn coping skills, self-empowerment, dealing with trauma, etc., you can benefit from therapy. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists that are available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist, and if things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist at any time. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endlessly searching for the right therapist. You can learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/lights. That's betterhelp.com/lights.
Lastly, one more thing to go. We're going to rank stuff. You want to get ready to jot these down?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Top 5 music biopics. Top 5 music biopics. Go to movierankings.net. I understand it's not updated. I don't want to get into it. Try and update it. But in the meantime, there's still a big catalog of movies in there. So Gosha, we're updating. We are updating as best we can on our end. Movierankings.net. You can go find our scores for movies, where things are streaming, and just trailers and stuff too. You can't pick a movie, filter it out, randomizer, all that and more. Top 5 music biopics. I'll start off. Number 5 for me, 89 out of 100, Ray. I left off the pianist.
The pianist, yeah?
The pianist. I left off the pianist. I'm sorry.
By the way, he's had a great comeback recently.
Yes.
Jim Brody. Like, he was doing that Dragon Blade shit. And
he is such a piece of shit in Succession. We just talked about this, but I did the rewatch. He is such an asshole in that. But he's like, you don't think he is because he's with fucking Logan and Kendall. So you're like, they're the assholes. But he is an asshole in that. His daughter was not really sick. She's like doing backflips in the pool. It's a huge piece of shit.
Him as Pat Riley was great too.
just
a depressed ex-player in his garage watching old highlights.
Ray, 89 out of 100. Jamie Foxx is like unreal. Maybe the best performance out of all 5 of my movies too, though. Obviously won an Oscar, but he was so fucking good. And now anytime he does impressions of celebrities and stuff, like I just go, it's like he did Ray and then he just unlocked something.
Jeff, did you hear on the long take when we played his Trump impression?
Dude, Jamie Foxx has maybe the best Trump.
I believe it. I believe it.
It is the best Trump.
The draft we did was the most talented, like dual threat, like musician.
Him doing Robert Downey Jr. on Rogan.
Yeah, we talked about this.
We brought that up.
Yeah.
He might be the most talented. I mean, he probably is the most talented person in the world to just be able to do really whatever he wants to do and be world class at it. Yeah.
What's the movie he talks about when he's Motherfucker Jones and Horrible Bosses?
We were just talking about snowfalling on cedars or something. Yeah. Like, fuck. I don't remember what it was.
So you have seen the movie. Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Dude, so good.
Ray, 89 of 100. Ken Jack.
For mine, I think my first one's going to have to be Walk the Line. Walk the Line. Unreal for many reasons, but I would say, and it's a 94 for me as well. I think that one of the most impressive things about it was that both Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon sang. Like, that is, to me, it's always been the mark of it. Like, we talked about this with Bohemian Rhapsody as well. It's not like you can just sing Freddie Mercury, like, no one can. So, but like with Johnny Cash, I'm still like very impressed with how Joaquin was able to get the voice. Same with Reese Witherspoon, and I think the acting was phenomenal. Obviously, 2 great actors, and the song sounded great. Impossible not to, like, at the very least, respect the shit out of that movie. So yeah, it's got to be my number one.
Chris.
All right, real quick. We are limiting this specifically to, like, mainstream releases and not documentaries about
Yes.
Okay. All right. Then number five, and people are gonna think this is a cop out, but it's based on a true story. The Sound of Music.
I almost put it in there because it is, but I was like, I'm gonna exempt that as well. Yeah. But no, it is.
Yeah. So that's number five.
Sound of Music. Oh, what a fucking movie. That for growing up, that was the longest movie I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, like, wait, fuck, were we going 5-1?
Yeah.
I just did my number one.
You did your number one?
That's my number one.
That's tough. I mean,
I guess I'll go to.
It's tough. Gooch.
I'm going to go Rocket Man, number five.
Okay.
Filling out my list right now. Number five, I'd put Rocket Man at a comfortable 89. There's a lot I love in there. There's some stuff where it drags out a little bit. But in terms of theater enjoyment, boy, is that a fun fucking movie to go see. I mean, the spectacle, and it perfectly encapsulates Elton John's discography. And I really respect the decision for Taron Egerton to go out and actually sing those songs. Because it adds a new twist, and it's not just like watching Bohemian Rhapsody, where it feels almost like a YouTube compilation of Queen songs. Yeah, I love Rocket Man. I still can't get over the fact Taron Egerton was snubbed out of a nomination that year.
That movie got iced.
It got iced out of everything.
Crazy.
Bohemian Rhapsody fucked them over.
It did. It was bad timing.
If one came out before the other, he would have gotten
Rockman would have swept, dude.
He would have gotten the attention that Rocky Mountain.
It was so much better in every single quantifiable way than Bohemian Rhapsody.
Great movie. Also, Richard Madden banger.
That's right. Yeah.
Number four for me is Walk the Line, 92/100. I mean, basically what Ken Jack said, it's amazing music, great acting. They also make Joaquin Phoenix like a behemoth of a man. Mm-hmm. And he's this tiny little lad. Great movie. Holds up so well. And always gets me into like a Johnny Cash kick too whenever I watch it, whenever I toss that on. I try to watch it like once a year. One of my favorite music movies. It's on my list. That would make sense. 92/100, Walk the Line. Ken Jack.
Do I go to number two now or do I go to number five?
Go backwards.
Yeah, go say five.
Well, my number two is Rocket Man for a lot of the reasons we were just saying. It's a 90/100 for me. Again, mostly because Taron Egerton was like so good in the dual threat sense of it. Like he's phenomenal, like really, really, really good singer. And also he acted his ass off in that movie. Great credit to our good friend Matthew Vaughn, who also did an awesome job. He was a producer on that, right? And Dexter Fletcher, I think, directed. Incredible job on that movie. And I think as far as ones where they didn't really pull a lot of punches, this is definitely one of them as well. Like, there was obviously a ton of red tape and a lot of creative editing with Bohemian Rhapsody. You didn't get really much of that in Rocket Man. Like, they really, I think that's what Elton John said too, right? He's like, you can make the movie do whatever you want. He's like, I'm not gonna tell you to like put rose colored glasses on anything. And that I love that. So that's my number two.
Number two, Chris, number four for you.
I'll Walk the Line. Yeah. I think that he'd been in prominent stuff, but I feel like Walk the Line was the moment where people realized actually two things. One, Joaquin Phoenix can be a major charismatic powerhouse actor. And two, that was James Mangold, right?
That was
I think one of his big breakouts.
That Copland, great movie, by the way. More people should watch that.
Been a while since I've seen it, but it's a very recognizable movie. Walk the Line.
Mm-hmm. Gooch,
number four. I don't know if this is going to end up on any of your all's list. A little bit older, Coal Miner's Daughter.
It's not, but that's it is. Yeah,
I mean, it's a great movie. It's about an artist from Kentucky. It's a movie I grew up watching. That's like gospel. Loretta Lynn.
Is that the what's the number one Kentucky movie? Like, what's the movie that you guys?
Elizabethtown.
Oh no! Wait, wasn't Logan Lucky? No, it's West Virginia. Fuck, never mind. Obviously not Kentucky.
I mean that
it has Kentucky energy though.
It does have Kentucky energy.
Not a lot of
Kentucky. October Sky in Kentucky.
Glory Road. Which
and that's what
makes
I was
going to bad.
Not a good Kentucky.
I mean that would be up there.
American Animals is Kentucky.
Yeah, that's actually about
Secretariat, U.S. Marshals.
I used to live. My apartment used to look down at the track that Secretariat was filmed at.
Harlan County, USA. That's good too. But I don't know if I would.
American Animals, very underrated movie.
Very underrated.
It's about a heist that took place at the college that pretty much shares campus with UK. Very, very cool. Evan Peters.
Coal Miner's Daughter. That's your
Battlefield Earth is set in Kentucky.
Really? Yes, that's actually yes.
Holy shit! Never mind. That's the number one.
Kingsman 2.
That's man, I forgot about that.
Channing Tatum's in this movie. He's dead.
Yep.
Or he's in a coma. He's in a coma for the entire movie.
And a 90 for Coal Miner's Daughter.
My number three, 94 out of 100, Straight out of Compton. Big Oscar snub.
Yeah, it really was.
Huge Oscar snub. Fantastic acting all movie. Great story. Just one of those things where you're like, you know what? They found a way to take multiple storylines, multiple people, and they could have made it. And this is kind of thing about Bohemian Rhapsody, even though it was the Freddie Mercury movie. They could have made it, I guess, not safe per se, but they could have really made it by the numbers, and it wasn't. It had some grit to it. It was raw. It was emotional. You kind of hated the people you needed to hate, the Paul Giamatti character.
Yeah.
It was just so well done. I mean, O'Shea Jackson Jr., all those guys, like, they just did a great job. It was very well written. I left that theater saying this is one of the best movies I've seen all year, and it ended up being one of the best movies I saw in that year. Yeah. And the fact that it got snubbed in so many ways was just crazy. That was the best picture nominee, in my opinion. Straight out of Compton, number three. Ken Jack.
My number three is Ray for a lot of the reasons. You guys said it's a 90 out of 100 for me. Ray, we talked a lot about Jamie Foxx. I do think this is one of the more impressive performances in a musical biopic. The movie, maybe not as good as like Walk the Line was, like just structurally. But as far as like performance pound for pound goes, I mean, Jamie Foxx's Ray is probably better than Joaquin Phoenix was as Johnny Cash. Yeah. Because not only did he have to do the voice, which is extremely hard, but he also like caught all of his mannerisms basically to the fucking minute little details, which was insane. Really, really enjoyed his performance in that. So yeah, gotta go with
who plays his wife in Ray?
Kerry Washington.
Yeah.
Kerry Washington. That will be my number three pick as well, just to piggyback right there.
Same. It's my number three.
So then we could all just kind of give it a round of applause because it is fantastic. Jamie Foxx, I mean, just fucking incredible.
One of the great lead performances ever. And I would argue, because I'm not sure exactly where he was in his career at this point, but was that kind of the moment when people went from, okay, this guy's a legitimately talented comedian impressionist to, God, this guy can be an amazing actor.
Yeah, I mean, it lifted him into a whole different echelon.
Yeah. I think Collateral came out first that year.
That was
still. That was
ultimate cable TV movies, Collateral.
I fucking love Collateral.
Baby. Chris, you're number three.
It's also Ray.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So we can just move on.
Rocket Man for me at number two, 94 out of 100. I mean, we gushed about Rocket Man for a long time. Some of the covers on that album are as good as some of the, and that's crazy to say, but like, there's a couple covers from that album that are unreal.
I love the honky cat cover between him and Richard Madden. It's so fun. It's a very different
Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting's amazing in that.
Great. He's got really good pipes. Even like not beyond that, and like singing stuff, like he can really sing.
That movie is just that is the best definition of breaking the mold of a biopic and just being a little different. I know it's a musical that turns some people off, but it's different. It feels real. It doesn't feel, and that's kind of the funny thing with the Weird Al thing too. He's like, fuck it, I'm not gonna make just some boring ass like squeaky clean thing. I'm gonna just
feels authentic to Weird Al.
I would not want
to
watch
Man
that.
Feels authentic to Elton John.
That's the thing with Bohemian Rhapsody I've complained about. It doesn't feel authentic to what Queen or Freddie Mercury really were. And Rocket Man feels like you're watching the Elton John movie. Like in his head, when he thinks about his life, he thinks about it in a musical where he's sinking to the bottom of the pool with a piano and like. Yeah, that movie was fucking
the Brian May biopic,
top tier.
The show stopping moment of him first performing at what is it, La Rodeo or where the club in LA
where they all float
and they're all floating. Like that's such a show stopping moment. I'm sure that's like probably how he felt like in that moment, like floating with everyone else above the stage. Like, yeah, I visually that movie is fucking incredible too. Like, just so cool.
Number four, Ken Jack.
Number four for me, technically never specified that it couldn't be a fictional biopic. So mine's going to be Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, which I think is genuinely as a semi-parody of Walk the Line. I think it is incredible even in its own right. It is so fucking funny. I think the singing in it and the songs they choose to do are also really good. And all the cameos, a little other parts. It's one of my favorite comedies. I think it doesn't get nearly enough love. It's an 89 out of 100 for me. John C. Reilly in that movie, like I think for maybe most of us, because we watched this, like, I think for us this is like middle school, maybe early high school. But like we're like, oh, John C. Reilly, the dude from Step Brothers. That's like, I don't know, he's the second fiddle to Will Ferrell, and then he's in this movie and he's incredible on his own, and this is like as good or better.
Another Beatles movie.
Another Beatles. That's one of the funniest.
Another Beatles.
What, Schwartzman, Paul Rudd, Justin Long, and Jack Black. Black is fucking.
That's been my Twitter. That's been my Twitter banner for 8 years now.
It's so funny.
Them as the Beatles.
Paul McCartney's a cunt. It was just so funny. Oh man, I love them.
Chris, number two.
Okay, well, for the record, I didn't think about this. If we're including things that are fictional, my number two probably would have been the most recent, A Star is Born. Mm. But we'll overlook that. And this one's kind of flimsy, too. But shit, if we can use Dewey Cox, 8 Mile.
Yeah.
100% counts.
I mean, Eminem is, you know, my musical deity. And it's one of those things where 8 Mile to me is such – it's like a time capsule of a movie because people don't understand, like – Eminem in 2002 was the biggest, like maybe the most famous person or at least musical artist in the world. He had the number one album, he had the number one song, and he had the number one movie at the same time. Like, and not to mention what's bizarre is like he's, I know he's playing himself, he is like legitimately good in this.
Yeah.
It's really well directed, and truly the final rap battle sequence is like one of my favorite scenes in any movie. It's just so, it's like watching a boxing match or something, you know, just the way that fucking final knockout punch he throws on Anthony Mackie, is so much fun. Yeah. So, I love 8 Mile. That's my number two.
It, in terms of staying power, I mean, there's more songs, Titanic, My Heart Will Go On, maybe, Frozen, Let It Go, always, but I mean, Lose Yourself is always going to be, in terms of like, you know, Oscar nominated songs.
I would say in recent history that the two you just named, Lose Yourself and Shallow.
Shallow, yes. I put Shallow in there for sure.
Yesterday, but like, yeah, I mean, iconic songs, iconic movies.
Yeah. Gooch.
Number two, Walk the Line. Mm-hmm. Johnny Cash, baby.
Number one for me, 95 out of 100, an ode to our good buddy Trill Ballins, Amadeus.
Amadeus, yeah.
Amadeus is, I mean, the best picture winner. The fact that I like Amadeus in 2022 is crazy because this is the only fucking thing my music teacher in elementary school ever showed us. She skipped all the scenes you couldn't see. I never knew how, like, this, I mean, I would have thought this was a G-rated movie growing up just because, like, the only scenes I saw from music class.
Fart and you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Amadeus is, it's a movie where if you've never seen Amadeus and maybe you don't like, and I don't even like older shit. People know I don't like period pieces. I don't like, it's a tour de force in every sense of the word in terms of acting and music. And it's just a little crazy. It's somehow the most batshit movie, but not at the same time. Because he's just such a crazy character. But Amadeus is a movie that I if you want to talk about movies that you hated when you were younger and then grew to love, this is maybe my 1A for me. Because we just watched it all the fucking time in music class and nobody cared at all. Nobody cared. Now imagine like we'd seen like a Weird Al movie back in elementary school. That'd have been amazing. That'd have been unreal. Like holding your Running with Scissors CD. Mm-hmm. And then you get to watch. But no, we watched. But no, Amadeus now. I mean, it's just an unbelievable movie. So yeah, that's my number one, 95.
Seeing 100. Him pop up in White Lotus just farting.
Yeah, done. Ken Jack.
For mine, my last one, my number five is Straight Outta Compton. We talked about it a little bit previously. Awesome cast. Two-time LCB interviewee Aldous Hodge really crushed it.
Yeah.
One-time LCB interviewee O'Shea Jackson. I don't think either of the other ones are on, but yeah. So like that was just an awesome, awesome movie. Really well directed. Really well acted. Really captured. I think. Like, it's not like I'm like alive and conscious during the time of like any of their musical or the musical career of the group, but like I felt like I was, it captured what I knew reading about them well. So that's my number five.
Chris.
Right. Well, ironically, your number five is my number one. It's Straight Outta Compton.
Mm-hmm.
Because what Straight Outta Compton, and I, to be honest, I forgot Aldous Hodge was in that. I love that guy. I think he's great. But what Straight Outta Compton did for me that some other biopics don't do is that I come out of some of these musical biopics and they put it out there like, hey, this artist was so influential. They, you know, they changed the world with their music. And sometimes I just come out of them and shrug my shoulders and say, okay, they were an artist. This movie does such a great job of establishing why these guys were important.
That's a good point. It's a good way
and
to put
what
it.
What they meant to musical culture and rap culture and the influence that they had on that genre. And it's a lot of these biopics get so goddamn dour too with the, and not to say that Straight Outta Compton isn't sad, but there's a crowd pleasing element to watching these guys like just rise up through, you know, into prominence. And it's a unique movie, and it's so sincerely directed by F. Gary Gray. And the fact that, you know, there were a lot of things that at the time you thought might not work. Ice Cube's son is playing him. Is that going to be stupid? Knocked it out of the park. Great chemistry among the actors. And Paul Giamatti was kind of held the whole thing down. I thought he was excellent. And, you know, ultimately there is a heartbreaking element to it. But I was – the word that I always use to describe that movie is fascinating.
The fuck the police scene is in Detroit, right, in that movie?
Yeah.
I think in terms of what you were saying about like cultural impact, that scene was like one of those. It was just like the build up, the tension in that scene, and just kind of how it pops off. Like there are so many of those moments where, I mean, I'm not old enough to like, none of us are old enough to have lived through that as like we were like conscious and like, you know, carrying around, you know, tape decks and like listening to like, so like that's a great way to put it. Like the mark of a good biopic, or maybe you didn't grow up in that era, like know it perfectly. It's like, can you feel the cultural impact? That's why I was kind of like, I mean, I bring it up all the time. People versus OJ.
God, you love the
shit rules. People versus OJ fucking juice. Rules. Because how many times are you going to see something that is also, I've never seen anything that is on one hand horrible, but on another hand, amazing.
Juice, you got to try this new sauce for the Milan movie.
They got to make more things like that. Like, they got to make more things where, like, there's something that's objectively.
It's the 90s, Juice.
Like he is as close to the word objectively terrible as you can possibly imagine. But then you had, like, you had all the other roles, like the Johnny Cochran's. Like,
everyone outside of the people that were the main focus of the movie or the
like
show.
Like, Courtney B. Vance, unreal. Yeah. Like, all that shit was amazing. But then in the same exact show, there was just, like, dog water. It's the most, it's a fascinating piece of, like, art.
Sarah Paulson was incredible. In that.
Yeah, like I've never seen anything where there's things that are both so like I've never seen anything that can win a Razzie and an Emmy at the same. It's like unbelievable.
Like you'll have movies where someone will outact the other people, or whatever. Like this was a stark difference between what was good and what was
but
bad.
But it didn't ruin it either. Yeah. It kind of just made it fun.
It's a fascinating piece of fiction because you have like, you know, you have like Sarah Paulson's good in everything. And like Courtney B. Vance is good in everything. But then you have like David Schwimmer, who I thought was like kind of incredible in it. Like despite the memes, like I thought he was actually really good. And then you have fucking dude, Cuba Gooding Jr. as
what an absurd cast.
One of the most bizarre casting decisions. Like
I feel like when they cast him, they were like, all right, here we go. Day one, people were Zojay. They go, he just leans, like Ryan Murphy leans over. He's like, we can't. Oh, wait, we actually cast him as.
I said that as a joke.
That was.
Who the fuck is he playing? Wait, who the fuck is Cuba playing?
Who else did we audition? Nobody. Oh, fuck. Number one. What's your number one? Gooch.
To Walk Hard. Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
I feel like you cheated on that one. I feel like Ken Jack.
Once
I
put it on the board and it was available,
I feel like Ken Jack was allowed to have
it. It was going to be Amadeus, but no, if it's going to be on the board and it's available, I'm taking it because it is one of my three favorite.
Amadeus, the big Kentucky movie, Amadeus.
Yep,
big time.
It's a fucking phenomenal movie. No, I have to go number one. If Walk Hard is on the board, I have to take it. It is one of my three favorite comedies of all time. Probably my most rewatched comedy of all time. Mm-hmm. Still have the DVD. So fucking funny. So many great moments. It perfectly parodies musical biopics. It nails it. Yep. And you never go more than 2 minutes without laughing out loud in that movie. It's so fucking funny.
It's very funny.
And just running through every single decade and like just like completely setting the tone perfectly. Yeah, like the drug bit. There's so many great running gags going throughout. Mm-hmm. Fucking Jack White showing up as Elvis.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Movies set in Kentucky, Harlan County, USA. Goldfinger.
Yeah. That's
Because they're in
Fort Knox.
Yeah. Yeah. They actually fly into the Bluegrass Airport in Lexington.
I didn't even think about that. I
assume that'd be a set in England.
I'm not letting you have that one. I'm not letting Kentucky have that.
John C. Reilly looking at a chimp and saying, fuck you. It's an iconic moment.
And I need to bring it up too. Yeah, phenomenal original music. Legitimately great original music. John C. Reilly not only singing well, but the lyrics actually working in the whole, the orchestra behind it. Like it actually comes together nicely. It's a album that maybe should have been nominated. I mean, it is very well done.
It got, I don't think it got, it didn't get Oscar, but it did get some, like the movie. And I think, or at least John C. Reilly got a Golden Globe nomination for it.
He was incredible. Everyone was, honestly.
Yeah. I mean,
you got Jenna Fisher. So
yes, she's yes. But oh, I forgot.
You can't go get double married.
The Jizz Man was in that. I forgot he was Dewey's son. Yeah.
One of his 80, his 80 kids.
Frankie Muniz as Buddy Holly. Like,
dude, the Beatles sequence in that is so fucking funny because none of these motherfuckers look like
they don't even like sound like him either. They're just doing
They literally just say shit like, "Well, I know this because I'm John from the Beatles."
Because I'm George Harrison. I just sit here on my guitar, silently weeps.
Dude, yep.
Dude, and I'm Ringo. So I'm the funny one.
Yep.
He's like, "You're shit drummer. You're lucky we still let you play the fucking drums."
Oh, Margot Martindale. I forgot. Yeah, it was mom.
I seem. Yeah. Feels like there's a rift happening in between the Beatles.
Yep.
Fuck, that's it. I got nothing else. Next, what's next week? What comes out? Oh, Black Panther.
Black Panther.
I keep forgetting it comes out this week too.
Yep.
And Fablemans. Fablesman, right?
Fablemans will probably have to wait a week.
That doesn't go wide until.
Is that this week?
It doesn't go wide until Thanksgiving. We'll do Black Panther next week, and then we'll do Fablemans.
Actually, very funny. I looked up because I was looking. I was like, about to put out a list of movies coming out this month, but it's so complicated because of the limited releases in November and this next coming month that it's hard to really pinpoint it. But I was using like a Cincinnati theater as my reference point. So I was like, all right, what will be playing in Cincinnati next weekend? Literally the three theaters I looked at, they're just playing Black Panther. There's nothing else playing.
There's the
every single screen, every single showtime.
The Times Square Theater here in Manhattan, it's like 40 showings on Friday.
Yep.
It's incredible. Crazy.
What do you,
that's
what
do you it. For Chris, Ken, Jack, Gooch, I'm Jeff DeLo. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
It's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pan at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
Iconic summer moments deserve an iconic drink. Reach for Mountain Dew, an American original. From its beginnings in the foothills of Tennessee to your biggest summer yet. The refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew is the perfect companion to your American summer adventures. Enjoy the refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew. Tasting great since 48. Look for Mountain Dew in stores near you at MountainDew.com. That's MountainDew.com.